This is Free Talk Live. We are at Rogers Campground in the beautiful Lancaster, New Hampshire. We can't tell you what the weather is like today because we're recording the first segment of Tuesday's show on Monday. Because we were having a conversation with Patrick Binder yesterday, and it was going good. And then, you know, we're nailed to the clock, so our time ran out. And I wanted to keep that that conversation going. Patrick is here. He's the proprietor over at Liberty.menu. Roger Paxton is still with me here in the studio.
Absolutely. Enjoying it. Thank you.
In the Lava Flow studios here at thelavaflow.com. That's your podcast.
It is. Yes.
One of your podcasts. And you can check out more Roger over there whenever you like. And Patrick, we were talking about Liberty.menu, but then we got into, and we get back into it, but then we got into a discussion about where we all came from. You came from Arkansas.
Right.
Roger, I came from down in Florida. Patrick, you guys moved out originally from California. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've lived in
Southern California.
I was living, grew up in San Diego and was living the last 12 years in Orange County, just an hour north.
So we were talking about some of the stark contrasts that that we noticed between,
right. When you know,
after
New Hampshire,
living
here.
Yeah. And then, you know, I was talking about the police state down in Florida where, you know, I saw cops everywhere. But up here, if I drive from Keene to Concord, which is an hour long drive between two of the major cities in New Hampshire, and when I say major, I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people. There's not a whole lot of people up here.
Right.
But you don't see very many police very often on that drive.
Well, we drove 2 hours up from Milton to here 2 days ago and didn't see not one single cop. And
that
was during
it.
Bike week even. So not even a single cop, which was fantastic.
And Bike Week is, for those that don't know, a very big festival that
right.
goes on in your area in the seacoast,
right.
Weirs Beach. Or is it? That's Laconia. That's the Lakes region,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, anyway.
It's just north of where I am living.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So like bikers everywhere, cops everywhere. But yet you didn't see a single cruiser.
Lots of bikes, but no cops.
Yeah. So it's totally different.
It is totally different. And there's all these small towns distributed throughout New Hampshire. And I bet you, I mean, I've only heard of so far, I'm staying in Croydon, and I've been told it's a one-cop town. And I imagine so many of these towns are one-cop towns.
Or less. The town Mark lives in has zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Do they rent some state police?
The state police have to provide their services
gotcha.
Or whatever, but they're hardly ever there.
Right.
I've never seen them driving to Mark's house, like sitting on the side of the road, so they don't, I mean, they only come when they're called,
right.
basically.
Which is how they should be providing a service if they're going to
exactly.
provide one.
Yeah, more like the firemen. When I need you, I'll call you.
But they actually got rid of the cop. There was a cop in that town,
wow.
and the town decided we don't need you anymore.
What town is it?
I can't say. Mark doesn't like me say on the air.
I understand that.
But some town in New Hampshire, right. there's 200 something of them.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of small towns like yeah. that would have one cop or no cops.
Right.
And that's not something you see in a lot of the U.S. Definitely not in California, where there's not a lot of small towns like this. I mean, you can go city to city to city, and it's hundreds of cops each city.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I traveled throughout the West Coast earlier this year on a big road trip, and I hit some towns that were like San Luis Obispo, California. It's a college town. Oh my God, I had to get out of there. We stopped just to get a snack. We're like, okay, it'll be a fun town. Cops on, like you said, on every intersection. We got to one intersection. I saw three squad cars. I was like, really?
Wow,
I got to get out of here. Yeah,
well, it
exactly.
never fails,
it's disgusting, and I'm got to go.
So when I was in Arkansas, we used to vacation in Florida a lot because that's where the nice beaches are and all of that. And every single time I would go down to Florida with my family, I would get a speeding ticket or some sort of a ticket, a seatbelt ticket, something every single time. And, of course, I had out-of-state tags, so they're going to target you anyway because they know you're just going to pay the fine instead of coming to court. But almost every single time. And that's just that's an absolute – and, of course, I would always tell them, hey, I'm already here spending tons of money to help your economy. Me, and you're still going to take more from
punish
me.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
So, have you guys ever seen those roadside signs that say "buckle up"?
Yeah.
So I noticed that they're phrased differently across the country.
Uh-huh.
And so in California, it's always "click it or ticket."
Yeah. Usually,
immediately
it's the
threat.
Law. Buckle
yeah.
up. It's
so
the law.
California's "click it or ticket," and then other areas it's the law.
Yep.
And then I saw it's our law, which I thought was a little bit nicer.
Yeah, a little
and
bit.
Then there was I've seen ones that were "buckle up, we care." And I was just like, okay, that I can relate to a lot more. But that's something I felt in New Hampshire because I often, you know, drive around a little bit if I'm doing a short drive without buckling up. And that I don't have a threat against
me. You're not going
to
get extorted.
Exactly. There's no threat currently against me for doing this action I'm freely doing.
Right.
That feels great. And
I don't think you're very smart for making that decision.
Right. No, I'm doing a short drive. But yeah,
but it's like people who ride around.
In safe situations.
It's like people who ride around without helmets on their motorcycles. I don't think you're smart for doing that, but it's great that you've got the freedom to do it.
My rule of thumb is if I'm riding around Keene where the speed limit's 30 and nobody's usually doing more than 30, sure, I'll ride with my seatbelt off. But if I get on the state roads and I'm hitting 55, 60 or whatever, I'll usually buckle up in that case. Yep. And I get the choice to make, you know, to make that here.
So you kind of do. If I'm in a car that doesn't shut up and it just beep, beep, beep about it. Yeah. Then I always put it on out of courtesy for my ears.
You can disable those things.
Oh, can you? I got to do that.
Hire somebody who knows cars and they snip a wire and that's
and
that.
It turns it off.
Right. So I did pull up the sign because I wanted to make sure I wasn't remembering it quite right. In New Hampshire, the buckle up signs say NH law, buckle up under age 18. And then under that, there's a blue sign that says common sense for all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get that.
And that's a good message. I mean, you know, preaching common sense, if all governments would do that, that wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Other areas come out with a threat on, you know, it's immediately to the threat. Click it or we are going to take it.
And to be honest, it's always going to be a threat against your life. It's always going to eventually get to that point if you refuse to be a part of it. And that's, it's terrible.
And you'll see that sometimes in the states surrounding New Hampshire, sometimes they'll put up warnings when you enter their state about what, you know.
Extra threats here.
Yeah. What was legal there ain't legal here, you guys. And, you know, of course, people have for a long time been known for smuggling fireworks down from New Hampshire to Massachusetts. And of course, now the reverse is going to happen
with
where
cannabis.
People are going to go down to Massachusetts to buy weed.
Right.
And then they're going to come back into New Hampshire because Mass and Maine have both legalized cannabis before New Hampshire has.
But at least now it's decriminalized here. So
not yet, but the governor has promised that August he's 1st. Going to sign it. So, well, he has yet to sign it, but he's promised that he's going to. So we're waiting for that to happen. And hopefully that's going to result in fewer ticketings and bus for marijuana here and maybe some deprioritization for that generally amongst law enforcement. And then maybe next year or the year after that, we'll see some further decriminalization.
Yeah, the bill's definitely not perfect, but it's a good starting point.
Resources freed up to go after people transporting firewood.
Exactly.
They don't like that up here. But yeah, it's not a completely free place yet, but it is the freest state of all of the 50 states. And you just came up for number 49.
I'm moving up.
That's a big jump.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was bad there. I mean, cost of living's bad there too. That was another major reason for moving. Cost of living is better here. And it was just the right time in my life.
Yeah, for me, the cost of living went up quite a bit. My tax burden went way down. But in Arkansas, the cost of living is much cheaper.
I would say my tax burden went up.
Oh, really?
Because in Florida, there was no income tax down there.
Oh, okay.
There was a sales tax, but I don't buy a whole bunch of stuff, so that's not a whole lot of money there.
Well, the county I was in Arkansas had the highest sales tax in the state.
Whoa.
And then, of course, income tax. It was 9.75.
Okay,
that's high.
Yeah.
It was 7% where I was.
And then we also, of course, had your income tax as well on top of that, which was just unbelievable.
And property tax.
Right, and property tax, of course.
But my property tax has quadrupled between Florida and here because in New Hampshire, they build pretty much all their tax base into the property tax. So there's a meals and rooms tax, so if you go out to eat, there's a 9% tax
there. And
then
there's the liquor as well that they get
They run that. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's all tax. Whatever
the meals and use seems like a easy target because you're going out to eat food.
Yep.
And there's no food tax right here?
No, tax on groceries.
On groceries.
If it's prepared food,
but if it's prepared,
whatever. Right.
And I like no taxes, but there's often exceptions for like medicine and food. And so it seems
in other
like,
states.
Yeah. And so it seems that you could go after the meals and use tax as being like, well,
yeah,
everyone needs to eat. And I can't always provide for like cook my own food and get groceries. So I should be able to go out to a restaurant and not have to pay the state.
Their argument is going to be, well, this is a tax that hits the tourists the hardest. Because they're hitting
easy
hotel
money,
rooms. Right. Hotel rooms, and
screw
tourists.
The other guy. It's free money.
Right. Tourists are more likely to eat out, and so that's going to be their argument. But you know, if we actually had a legislature, or when we have a legislature in New Hampshire that is focused on cutting the size of government, then they won't have to. They won't have the argument that they need that money because we'll be cutting their programs, right? So if you cut out all the reasons why the taxes exist, then it'll be easier to say, well, we don't need this tax anymore because we don't have those programs anymore. Whatever bureaucrats are being supported by that meals and rooms tax, which is probably some big old meals and rooms bureaucracy
Right. Of course,
then
that's part of the reason why we're here.
And then there's the Liquor Commission, which is another thing that could just X off the
easy
list.
Easy one, yeah. And that's something I think of when I'm traveling and vacationing places is how much is it going to cost to be there? And one of the things I want to do is buy some alcohol. How is it going to be a pain in the butt? Do I have to go to a state store? Is it going to be really, really expensive? And I think of that whenever I plan a vacation. You know, you want to make it cheap and fun and
Patrick
and
Bender
that stuff's just gonna be
from liberty.menu. Check out his website. You can put stuff up on it for free. There's some also some sort of categories you can pay a few bucks for and then get some bonuses and list your liberty-oriented business to the world at liberty.menu. And congratulations on your move, dude.
Thanks, dude.
Welcome home.
And we'll continue more from Rogers Campground here in moments on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. We are at Rogers Campground for day number 5 of Somalia Fest and Shire Fest, the final day of these great first-year festival events, which have been just a good intimate time with some good liberty-oriented folks, some people who I've known for a long time, and people who I've never met before. We've had some brand-new guests on who were brand-new movers this week in the last several days. We had a guy who literally just moved this weekend, and he arrived here at Somalia Fest and Shire Fest.
Right.
We got the Bender family that showed up just like a week ago.
Yep. That's one of the great things about these events is that you get to meet so many new people that you add to your family, and it's just amazing. That's one of the things I love about this. You know, seeing the people that, you know, we see all the time is great, too.
Sure.
But meeting those new people, that's what it's all about.
And it's really important for them, too, to be able to kind of immediately connect with the community of who will be their future neighbors, whether they're moving this week or whether they're going to move in 2 years. It's nice to come here and meet some of the people who have already made the commitment to come here, and you can find out what it's like to be living in New Hampshire as a liberty-minded person. You know, what sort of what difficulties did people have to go through to get up here? You had to sell a house, is that right?
I did, and
you had to
that
move
was
a whole family.
Right, had to move. You know, four of us, but 1,500 miles away. But trying to sell a house 1,500 miles away
that's
was a
tricky.
Challenge. I was fortunate that I was able to give my father power of attorney, which made a lot of it a little bit easier. But still, the negotiations, and of course, the day before we moved, we literally had 90% of the stuff on our moving truck. We go out to eat that night, going to get ready to leave the next morning. We walk in the house from dinner, and the entire bottom floor of our house is flooded because the washing machine ran over
about
the 3 hours we were at dinner. So that was the day before we were pulling out to leave. So we had to deal with that 1,500 miles away, too. It was a nightmare.
Yep. Yeah, I know what you mean. I had a house that I was selling. I wanted to move here. I didn't want to wait to sell the house. Right. I wanted to get up here and sell it remotely. And things went really crazy with that situation. I had a friend who was managing the house for me. He got murdered in the time frame that I was not living down there. Jeez. The guy who was living in the house, who was his tenant, turned out that he was a sicko and was like molesting his granddaughter.
Oh,
so he ended up getting arrested. And like all this time, I'm trying to sell this damn house. And of course, my first offer comes in, and before all the S hit the fan, I turned it down, which was a huge mistake.
Right.
The housing market was crashing. I should have just taken it. So then I had, had to wait on the second offer from somebody else, and it was $20,000 less. So I took a $20,000 hit just because I said, I'll wait. I'll see if I can get it back. Offer and no,
it was a risk, and it didn't work out for you.
So so glad I don't have to remotely manage a house anymore. It's bad enough to have to manage a house across town in Keene, let alone 1,500 miles away or whatever. By the way, it's Ian Freeman here from Free Talk Live. Roger Paxton joining me on the second mic from the Lava Flow podcast.
Good to be here again.
And we are again in the Lava Flow studios here at Rogers Campground. Arguably the most beautiful campground, certainly the most beautiful campground I've ever been to.
And now that the sun's coming up, the clouds and the fog is lifting,
burning off a little bit.
Incredible view out here right now.
And joining us here, by the way, it is the, what is it, Tuesday right now?
Yes, it is.
Tuesday,
I had to think about it too.
Everyone's like, what?
I still have a calendar with stuff I'm supposed to be doing, but I never get anything done here except for the show.
Right.
I get the show done and then hang out with people all day, and I just forget about all the responsibilities.
Right.
And that means they pile up and they got to get done at some point. But
right.
Kendall is joining us here. Kendall Strahan
is
with us all the way from Texas, although you live in New Hampshire now.
Yes, I do.
And you are the rare, you don't usually see a black guy with a Texas hat on, but I guess you see him more often in Texas, right? Like a kind of a cowboy hat. I don't know if that's what you call it.
It's a cowboy hat.
Is that a cowboy hat?
Okay. He is from Texas.
He really is. He really is. You're born and raised out there?
Yes, I am.
And you told me yesterday you're from Houston,
Texas.
Now, what made you come up to New Hampshire?
Huh, it's an interesting story behind that.
I want to hear it, the whole thing.
This is a long story. No, I'll give you the short version. In all honesty, I didn't want to come to New Hampshire. In all honesty, just being real with everybody. But my wife, she actually wanted to come to New Hampshire. She's been talking about it ever since we met in middle school.
So that's the reverse, by the way. Normally, right. You know, the Liberty Movement's kind of a sausage party to some extent, and there are a lot of guys out there who their excuse for not coming is, well, my wife doesn't want to move. So yours was the reverse situation.
The reverse.
You were the one who
did it. Yeah, I did not want to leave Texas.
Luckily, wives can be very persuasive.
Mine was very. She had a lot to do with our move. It would not have happened as soon as it had without my wife pushing me. So it worked out great for us.
So she wanted to go from when she was in middle school, and you knew her back then.
Yes, we've been together since middle school. So it's a total of 20 years. As a matter of fact, we just had a 19-year anniversary, wedding
congratulations.
Anniversary. Congratulations. So appreciate that. But yeah. But the goal was she always wanted to get up north. She kind of hated the South.
Okay.
She really did.
The weather or the people?
It's the people. Okay. You know?
I can agree with that in a lot of ways. Absolutely.
We're all from the South.
Right.
You're from Arkansas, Roger, and I'm from Florida originally.
Right. And, I mean, just being, you know, black in the South is not the best thing, and I could talk about that all day, but I'm not.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just a different world for us down there, you know, and my wife she was tired of it. We had kids. She wanted to raise the kids somewhere to where they can be free to be who they are, you know, and kind of experience life from a different avenue versus what we grew up seeing, you know.
Well, and not getting an immediate reaction when people see the color of your skin. Because in the South, that absolutely happens, no doubt about it.
Right.
So, well, I mean, that's not to say it won't happen up here.
Right, but it's much less common.
It's less.
Sure.
I mean, New Hampshire. Now, it's interesting that that's the case because there was in Keene, which is like 96% white and like 2% Asian and like 0.6% black. I mean, there's hardly any black people in town. Whenever I see a new black guy, I want to run up and hug him and say thanks for being here. But I remember reading a newspaper letter to the editor several years ago, which was written by a black lady who was actually from Sarasota, Florida, which is where I'm originally from. Now, I didn't know her. I just happened to see this letter to the editor, and she said she was leaving Keene because she had felt racism coming from some of the people in town.
Really
interesting.
And I was, you know, really disappointed to see that, obviously.
Well, there's a-holes everywhere. I mean, you're not going to get away from a-holes wherever you go. But in my experience, there are much fewer here. You know, I think I live on the most diverse street in New Hampshire. My next door neighbor is Filipino. My across the street neighbor is Filipino. We have Puerto Ricans that live down the street, and it's only a street with 9 houses.
Wow.
So I think we per capita have the most diverse street in the state.
It sounds that way. So she left because of frustration over this, and I'm just thinking, gosh, you know, I'm not black, so I don't see this, I don't feel that, and I always wondered, you know, what it's like for somebody coming into this place where, you know, you're in Berlin, New Hampshire, Kendall.
Right.
I don't know what the percentage, the demographics are up there, but I bet they're not that different from Keene.
1%, no.
1%. Well, he brought 5 with him, so that increased the population quite a bit.
I mean, it's fun to joke about it, but to some extent, it could be a serious issue that could affect, you're going to launch a business, and I just, you know, want to make sure things work.
Well, in all honesty, the population, as far as blacks, from what I've seen in Berlin, it's not too many of them. A lot of them work for the state prison, so you really don't see a lot of black guys up there, or black families in general. And like you said, I have 4 kids with me, so we make up some of the black population of Berlin.
Right. A significant portion.
I mean, you do have people that come in and out, but most of them come from New York, from what I've seen, and they come in to visit family at the prison or whatever, you know, so they don't really stay in Berlin.
Right. What's the population of Berlin?
Depends on how you look at it. On record, it's 10,000.
Okay.
You know.
And that's down, by the way. It's down from, I don't know what it was, when the logging mill, there was like a big logging mill up there. Just for listeners that don't know, Berlin is about maybe, what, a half hour from here? 20?
GPS says about 44, 45 minutes.
So, you know, even though we're pretty far north, Berlin's a little bit more north.
I mean, it's right close to Canada.
Canada,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the city in the northern part of New Hampshire.
And, right.
You know, when we call things cities in New Hampshire, you got to keep in mind that there's a scale involved here. Right. We're coming up here in moments. We're going to continue. You can stick with us for a few seconds.
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
More in moments. This is Free Talk Live from Rogers Campground.
Tired of spending hours hunting down the day's essential political news and views? Let Tom and Steve at Rational Review News Digest do it for you. Visit rationalreview.com for free, hand-curated news, commentary, and audio and video content. Choose from web, social media, and once daily email editions. We've been the Freedom Movement's daily newspaper since 1991. Come find out why at rationalreview.com.
This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire, northern part of the state, nestled in the White Mountains with just an incredible view surrounding the entire campgrounds. It's absolutely outstanding. And even though this is going to be my last day here, the Porcupine Freedom Festival is about to kick off tomorrow. So even if you have yet to get up here, it's still not too late. That goes through the weekend. You can go to porkfest.com to check out more about that. We're here for Somalia Fest and Shire Fest. You can go to somaliafest.com to see that. We had a great rave last night that Will Coley threw. I didn't know until this weekend that he was a DJ.
I found that out this weekend, yeah, too. I heard he did a great job last night.
It's kind of like his past life, something right. that he did in the past and that he doesn't have time for these days. But since he's on vacation, he can do it while he's here. And he went for 5 straight hours of just spinning some great tracks, some great electronic
that
music.
That is hardcore.
Late yeah. into the night. Yeah, it was really was, because that is a long time to be performing. And he did a great job. And me and Derek and Steven and a few other folks were out there just having a great time. So it was awesome. And it will continue to be a lot of fun as more people continue to arrive throughout the weekend. So you don't want to miss this event, whatever Freedom Festival it is. If you're together with hundreds of libertarians in the woods at Rogers Campground, it's going to be a good time. So definitely come on up here. In fact, our guest, Kendall Strahan, is with us, Dean and Roger, in the Lava Flow Studios doing Free Talk Live here. Kendall, you are one of the organizers of this upcoming Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Yes, I am.
He is one of the main organizers. Let's get that clear. He and his wife are co-producing this event.
And we can get into that coming up here in a moment. But we were talking about, you know, what it's like to be a black guy or black family from Texas, having moved up to probably one of the whitest states in you know, all of the United States. And not only that, but to move to the middle of nowhere, basically, where you are in Berlin, New Hampshire, far away from pretty much anything. I mean, you would have to travel, what, 2-3 hours to get down to, say, Manchester or something like that?
2 hours to Manchester and 3 hours to Boston.
Wow. Yeah.
And we were talking on the break, and I asked you, and we decided to save it for the air. Have you experienced any blatant racism since you've been here that you can remember?
No. Cool. Not personally.
And you've been here more than a year.
Right. Okay. Just a year. I moved up here last April. Well, I'm just going a little over a year now. But, I mean, in all honesty, I've only heard somebody use the N-word, you know, only once in Berlin. And I guess it was some older French guys, and they were having a conversation, and they were talking about football, and the guy was like, hey, you know, that guy's a big whatever. And
okay, I'm gonna and, have to.
I'm sorry, my bad. I'm sorry, my bad. I apologize.
Even though you're black, I can't let you say that.
I'm sorry. My bad. And the guy, his friend, turns around and looks at me, and he's like, and I didn't say anything. I was like, hey, he's not talking to me. Right. And it didn't bother me, you know. Yeah, but that was the only time that.
And
I really
I'm sure
heard
that's
that.
Something you heard in the South quite a bit, though.
Well, in the South, you hear it a lot. Right.
Really?
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, being from the South, I definitely understand that. And my father, who I love to death, he's a wonderful man. I wouldn't be the man I am today if it weren't for him. But he was raised in that old school, you know, racist style.
Right.
And, you know, he would throw that word around all the time. And was it derogatory when he said it? Of course. But it's just the way that he was. And it made me sick to the point where I had to tell him that if you continue using that word around my kids, then we're going to have to keep my kids away from you because I am not going to teach my children that, because he tried to teach it to me all of my life. And I wasn't going to have that with my kids. And of course, I had the same conversation with my mother about her religion that she kept trying to push on my kids, which was also a tough discussion. But that's just not something that I want my kids to experience. So it's great to be up here where, you know, of course, I'm a white guy. I don't see racism very much. But up here, I definitely see it even less because of people like my father.
Well, we see some, you know, I mean, I don't want to make a direct comparison to the civil rights era, but we experience in Keene, there's a group of haters that hate not because of the color of our skin, but because of our political beliefs.
Right.
And they hate the libertarians. They hate the free staters. They hate us because we're a threat to the status quo.
Right.
And these people have gone to local businesses and they have told them, there was I don't know if I can tell that story. Anyway, let me tell you, let me see if I can. So she told me something in confidence, so I don't want to say that on the air.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact, having heard it from business owners in town, that they've been contacted by some of these haters who said, if you are doing business with, or if you are a free stater, then we're not going to come and do business with you. If you're servicing the Free Staters, we had a place called McHugh's. I can talk about this because they're closed now. He retired and shut his place down. Dude was a libertarian, the guy that owned the place. Self-described libertarian, lived in Massachusetts, but he owned a club in Keene, a bar, basically. Right. And we had social Sundays there for years. And he had told me once that he'd gotten some email from some people. I don't know how many of them. It didn't sound like very many, but that were saying they were going to boycott McHugh's if McHugh's continued to allow social Sundays to happen, you know, at his place. And he told them to go F off, basically, because, you know, he doesn't know who they are. He didn't know them from Adam, and right. he knows we're there every week buying drinks and, you know, buying food, and we're good customers. So, you know, he made the right choice in that case, but it does go to show what is going on behind the scenes. There's one business in Keene that was taking Bitcoin and then stopped after a year of taking Bitcoin at their business. And I had recruited them into Bitcoin. I'd gone to the county fair. That's where I met them, and they were doing like a food truck kind of thing. And I introduced them to Bitcoin, and then like a year later, I managed to close them and get them to start accepting it. So it was a long process. And then a year after that, I find out that they had stopped taking Bitcoin, and it's because there were some customers, supposedly. I don't know how good of customers or how many they were, but they told them, if you keep taking Bitcoin, we're not going to come to your business anymore. Right. And that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that they hate Bitcoin. That has to do with the fact that they hate Free State Project, Ian Freeman, Free Keene, all these things. And so it's like, I've always said that like, we have all these haters in town, and they've been very nasty, and they'll, you know, they're obsessed with us, and they, you know, they're like basically like stalkers almost. They pay attention to everything that we do and try to find things that they can get us in trouble for. And they're just a sick, sad group of people. But I've always said I'm grateful that, you know, we haven't gotten to the point where anyone's burning crosses in our front lawn. I've had my house egged several, a few times. Had peace flags ripped down off, from the front porch. I've lost like 25 peace flags over a period of three or four years.
You think it's the same people doing that over and over?
It's stopped for like the last 8 months, and that was after I finally brought in Keene Police. You know, there's no other protection service.
They
I
have
can
a
go
monopoly.
To.
We have to use
finally
it.
Finally brought them in, and they actually did a good job. They did some investigation. They I had surveillance footage of the car that had come by, and you know it had a little dent in the side of it, so it was pretty easy to identify. Right. And they found that guy, and
nice.
And he was sorry when they found him, and I said, look, you know, I don't want to bring charges against these guys. They were just, it was high school kids and college kids, and it
you
was
just
like,
wanted it to stop, and that was the only way that we could make it stop in the monopoly police situation that we have,
right? And so I said to the police, say, look, you know, I don't want to bring charges against them, I just want to get the flag back, you know, I just want to, you know, make things right.
Right.
And so dude offered to buy me two flags to replace the one that he'd stolen, and he was already actually down in North Carolina. I guess he went to college at Keene State. And he'd gone back home for that time. And so he ordered a couple flags on Amazon and sent them to my house. And so we were good to go on that one. And then I think probably the word got around, because what was happening, we had heard, was that it was kind of like a, I don't know, like a college initiation or high school kind of boys that steal the flag, I'll steal the flag, that kind of thing.
Right.
Of course, you know, the irony of stealing a peace flag is pretty clear.
Right.
You know, so they have to live with that. The ones who did get away with it, they have this stolen peace flag.
Yeah.
But, you know, those just some nasty things that pushback against, we don't want your kind around here is something we've definitely experienced. And, you know, get back to being black in New Hampshire, there was a guy in Keene, one of the token black guys in Keene, who I was talking with for a while. And I said, well, what was it like? I mean, you grew up here.
Right. Oh, so he was a native.
Yeah. So what was it like? And he said, well, you know, what it really was, it wasn't that people were racist. It was that they'd only seen black people in the movies.
Right.
And they didn't know how to, you know, even though we're just people, they still, it felt weird to them. They didn't know how to interact on a like real level. I don't know. It was weird. But he didn't, you know, it didn't push him away or anything like that. It was just,
that was really
his analysis.
I mean, that's really unusual, because there's got to be some sort of a being taught that, because children don't act that way. When kids get around kids of other races, they don't have any trouble interacting with each other, because they haven't, if at that point they haven't been taught that.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily trouble interacting. It's probably just the, like, if you're a kid and all you've ever been around is kids that have the same skin tone as you, and then
that's
all of a sudden there's this black kid over there, you might be confused by that.
Well, sure.
You might want to know why. Did you get sunburn?
Right.
We had a question from one of my kids. Why is this kid's skin darker than mine? Why is his skin, his black?
Right. And that's just,
it is.
Explanation.
It's just a natural curiosity.
We explained it
scientifically, the melanin and all of that. And, oh, okay. And
yeah. We're going to continue more with Kendall Strahan, Ian and Roger here on Free Talk Live from Rogers Campground. This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground for the Shire Fest and Somalia Fest festivals. First year for those events, but it's not our first year here. Free Talk Live having broadcasted live from almost all of the pork fests in the past, with the exception of last year. And always love to come out here to be around the Liberty community that just keeps getting bigger and better as more new people come into it, as they pick up their lives and their families, jobs, careers, and move up to New Hampshire, because they've learned that this is the destination for people who care about freedom. There is no other migration project. And there's a bunch of others that are trying to compete with this migration that's happening here to New Hampshire. But they just, they don't have the traction. They don't have the history.
Well, and not even close. That's the difference. I mean, none of them have even maybe hit 1% of what New Hampshire has.
Yeah. And they're, they're nothing. I mean, they're trying to take over a little town in North Carolina.
Or now the big one in the Midwest or whatever.
Arizona.
Right.
The Free State Wyoming, that one's been dead for years. That was the biggest competitor to the Free State Project was Free State Wyoming, because Wyoming got second place in the vote. So when the Free State Project chose from the 10 candidate states, New Hampshire won overwhelmingly. Wyoming was second place in that. And a bunch of the people out west were like, well, we don't want to go east of the Mississippi, so we're just going to stay out here and we're going to go to Wyoming. Well, some of them actually did. They actually did get some people that moved out there. But Wyoming's such a big place.
It's huge, yeah.
They moved all across the state, and it was the kind of people who just wanted to kind of move somewhere, shoot their guns out in the backyard and be left alone.
Yeah.
And they got that. That's what they have. They held a Jamboree Festival, kind of like their competitor to Porcupine Freedom Festival. They held that for a few years, and then that just disappeared. They haven't updated their website in a decade at this point, so they're long gone. And there's nothing else out there. You'll see them pop up all the time, and it's like usually it's just somebody who's too unmotivated to pick up their own lives and move to New Hampshire.
So they want everybody to come to them?
Yeah, come on over here to Arizona. We got Free State West now. This is the newest one, which is a reuse of Free State West from back when somebody wanted it to be more than Wyoming. So it was Free State Wyoming, then somebody made Free State West, which was like Wyoming and Idaho and Utah and Montana.
And that kind of defeats the whole purpose, though, because you're making them so far apart that you're not going to affect
anything. You can't do anything. So now Free State West, they're trying to get people to move to Arizona. It's like, come on. Like, if you're willing, why would somebody want to move to a place where the person who's leading the project wasn't willing to do the same thing that they're asking everyone else to do? Why would anyone want to do that? It doesn't work.
Right.
But this is working, where we already have thousands of people who've moved to New Hampshire, thousands of libertarians, voluntarists, like-minded, liberty-loving anarchists. They've come here, and more are coming. And this is a great week for it, because a lot of people come up to these festivals, like Porkfest, which is about to start tomorrow, and then they stay. This is their move. This is their first arrival here in New Hampshire. And it's just so exciting. New blood comes in, new people with new ideas that they can, plug into the community and bring to the table, new talents to bring to the marketplace. And so you should join us. You really should. You can go to ShireSociety.com, and there's a page on there about moving to New Hampshire. Of course, the Free State Project still recruiting signers, I believe. Over
they haven't stopped taking signers.
So, even if you don't want to join anything, that doesn't matter. Just come on up here. Right. You can still get involved in the community. You don't have to have a membership in anything. So it's Ian and Roger here in our studio, the Lava Flow Studios, on their campground, the Paxton Fest campground here. And Kendall Strahan, you showed up yesterday. You got the family unpacked in one of those cabins over there.
Right.
You are new-ish to New Hampshire. You've completed your first year.
Yes, sir.
So you haven't left yet, so that's a good sign. Because a lot of people have left. We were talking about this the other day.
Right.
A number of the people who've moved here, they just, their life's journey took them elsewhere. But it sounds like your wife's pretty serious about staying.
Well, Andy's putting in deep roots. They're buying a house. They've bought a
business. Commercial building, right?
Commercial building.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because that sounded like a pretty cool plan.
Well, my wife and I purchased a commercial building in Berlin, New Hampshire, actually right off of Main Street. We got the building rather cheap.
Everything's cheap in Berlin. It's the Detroit of New Hampshire.
Right. And, you know what? And it's funny you say that. It really is.
Without all the crime, although.
Right. I mean, if you look at what happened in Detroit, the same thing kind of happened in Berlin with the mills.
The logging industry died up there for some reason, and it turned into a dying town.
Right.
Houses started to go on the market and drove prices through the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, you could drop 10 grand and get a house in Berlin. Probably won't be the best house.
But you can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah.
And that's great for people who are moving up here with limited resources.
Right. Now, you had said yesterday off the air you wouldn't recommend somebody coming up there who needs a job, though.
Right. And that's just my personal opinion from what I've seen just being in Berlin for roughly a year. There are jobs in Berlin, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, the main job
Walmart.
Is the prison in Walmart.
Yeah, right.
Correct. So if you come up there to look for something other than that, then no. But if you have an entrepreneurial mind and you kind of have what I like to call a go-get-it attitude,
yep.
then, yeah, you'll do good in Berlin.
Or if you can work from home, like a telecommute kind of thing. It's I've never been there.
Really?
I mean,
I haven't either. No, I mean, it's so close to us right now, we should probably go.
I've come up here for a decade and for freedom festivals, but I've never gone to Berlin. So you guys are starting up a commercial property with the intention of opening up, was it a jazz club?
It's more of a jazz style lounge, kind of like an upscale coffee house. The plan is to have live music there. If we can get, jazz style music, have open mic, poetry night, we're trying to bring some of the Southern culture for the food to Berlin.
Nice.
Which I think it'll be a plus once we get everything going.
Yeah.
So we just want to bring a chill spot, because Berlin doesn't have that.
It
has Dunkin' Donuts. It brings community together, too.
Yeah, it brings community together.
So what, is there a couple bars in town? And, like, where could someone else go to? And you guys are going to be the only place?
No, you have a couple of bars. You have the VFW. You have Dunkin' Donuts, which is the local hangout.
Wow. So, yeah, there's a real need in the market for this, then.
Right. I mean, it's so funny because we first moved to Berlin last year. Everybody's like, hey, you going to go to the mall? I'm like, what's the mall? And come to find out there's Walmart. So.
Wow.
So, like, really?
Well, hey, at least you've got a Walmart, though. There's a lot of towns that probably don't. So at least you've got that.
Is it a super Walmart? Probably not.
No, it's not a super Walmart.
Most of them aren't super up here.
Yeah, they're all super all over the place in the South.
Yeah, the South, every one of them is super. 24 hours, grocery store. We don't have that in Keene. But that's the Keene city government's fault. They prevented Walmart from going.
Really?
They were going to open a super Walmart, and Keene said, nope.
Wow.
We want to be a small town forever, so you can't
do anything. But it's not really a small town. It's 30-something thousand people, right?
Right. Well, yeah, Keene's about 23,000.
Okay, okay.
And that's a college town, right?
It is, yeah. And, but there's still a certain group of people that live there that – they want it to be and feel like a small town. So you can't – there's certain regulations in Keene. You can't build a building that's more than 5 stories tall.
Wow.
Because they don't want it to look like a city. They don't want it to look urban or whatever. There was a proposal a couple years ago for Verizon to build a tower on a hill that was to the east of Keene. And there was this big uproar against this tower. Oh, we can't have the tower. It's going to ruin our view. We got to have this perfect – all trees, no tower view on the hill. But the thing is, there was already a tower on this hill. So there's already – Time Warner has a tower. That's where their head end is with all
the
satellite
two towers dirt. Is just way too much.
We can't have that.
That's too much.
So I think Verizon ended up renting space on the Time Warner tower. So we still got 4G in Keene.
Right.
That was what they were going to use the tower for.
Right.
But just it's that kind of small town mentality. If we want to stay a small town and keep these flatlanders out and that kind of thing.
Well, the winter's almost kept me out, I'll be honest. But now that I've been through a pretty decent sized winter last winter, I feel much more comfortable with it.
It's got to be pretty brutal up in Berlin, right?
I was about to say the winters in Berlin are kind of brutal.
And in Texas, did you ever see snow before you moved up here?
Once or twice when
Houston's
I was younger.
Close
but
to the
like,
ocean, right? Closest?
Yeah. Half an hour from the ocean.
Yeah, Galveston.
Yeah.
You're not too far. But about an hour or something away from Galveston.
Yeah, they actually get some hurricanes. I've heard of hurricanes hitting Houston pretty bad.
The hurricanes is the norm now.
I don't miss that. That's one of the things. I mean, I don't miss living in Florida at all. There's every now and then I see lightning, like lightning storms in New Hampshire, and I'm I liked that in Florida. When it doesn't strike your house, it's really right, pretty. Yeah. When it does strike your house, it's
well, tornadoes is what I don't miss at all. I mean, right. We had a tornado oh, yeah. hit our house in 94 and did a ton of, I don't know, $80,000 worth of damage to the house I lived in and destroyed a couple of our cars. And I don't miss that a bit because that is such a terrifying feeling because they happen so quickly. You have no way to prepare. You right. don't know that they're coming. And wow, that's scary.
Right.
The when a tornado does happen up here, and it's very rare, there was one that happened several years ago in Massachusetts, and it just destroyed yeah. everything. I mean, because up here, I mean, it's not like you can really build to prepare for a tornado anyway. Right. But you know, they don't have like high wind structures or whatever, anything like that up yeah. here, and so they just tear through all these old tinderbox houses oh, yeah. like they're nothing. So anyway, yeah, the weather, it's a challenge. It is, but you know, it's one of the interesting things. I think it's nice to have seasons. I never had that before.
And my wife and I are the same way, but one thing that I really like better here is that in the summer, it's not just completely oppressive. I hated going outside in the yeah, summer, in
especially
the south.
At night. Yeah, it's cools just down.
Miserable.
Summer year round in the south.
Yeah.
yeah. So like today it's a beautiful day. It's, you know, almost July now, and it's just
right.
absolutely the most perfect day you could have. It's probably 95 degrees in Arkansas, I would imagine right now. So.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, in Florida, I was from the west coast of Florida. It was like hot all year, and then a couple months in the wintertime, a little cooler. And that was, you know, the only change. That was it.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low, and transactions are confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Get started at Dash.org. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help us create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org and get your own Dash wallet today. That's Dash.org.
This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground, kicking off the second hour of this Tuesday edition of the show. For those of you that are wanting to call in, sorry, you can't do that because normally we are an open phones talk show, and we'll get back to that format probably tomorrow. But for the last 5 days, this is day number 5 of Shire Fest and Somalia Fest up at Rogers Campground with a bunch of liberty-minded folks here. I'm Ian Freeman. We've also got Roger.
Yep, I'm glad to be here.
Roger Paxton, the host of Lava Flow, the Lava Flow podcast, which you can get over at thelavaflow.com.
Absolutely.
And he does some other shows, too, including a libertarian view of
Star Wars. A libertarian
view
of the Star Wars universe. It's called Resist the Empire. It's resisttheempirepodcast.com.
Yeah, so that sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. We have a blast with it.
And we're here with Kendall Strahan, who's one of the, not that new mover. He's for the Free State Project. He moved about a year ago with his family up to Berlin, New Hampshire, which, interestingly, you were saying, Kendall, that you were thinking about moving to Keene. I had thought about moving to Berlin originally, just because the houses were so damn cheap.
Right.
And I'm one of those kind of guys. I can work from anywhere. We do a radio show, so as long as I've got an internet connection, I can do this.
Right.
And it's just the houses are so cheap there. I thought, oh, it'd be a great place to buy a house, but it's probably a little bit colder there, and there's not much going on. And
no.
So we ended up going to Keene, and it was what inspired us to go to, or me to go to Keene, was some of the earliest movers there. I moved back in 2006.
Oh wow.
So the people who'd moved there before me were doing some really cool civil disobedience, and I thought, man, I got to get up there with those folks.
So you weren't the genesis of all of that civil disobedience?
No.
That's what everybody thinks and everybody says these days. So.
No. See, people don't know their history.
Right, of course.
And, you know, the newbies coming in, they don't know who Russell Canning and Lauren Canario were. And so these guys were getting arrested doing civil disobedience. They had the federal police arrest them inside the post office once.
Wow.
And just, you know, really interesting times. And I thought, God, I got to get up there. I've got this radio show. I've got a video camera. I could help publicize what these people are doing. It was my goal. I mean, I didn't intend to go up and do civil disobedience, but
it kind of worked out that
way. But it's catchy,
right?
When you're around people like Russell, who is a real, you know, inspiration to me, he always had a smile on his face. It didn't matter if he was getting put in handcuffs and stuffed right in the back of a police cruiser. He was always just cracking jokes with the cops that were arresting him and just had a real good attitude about it. You know, he was real understanding and forgiving towards these men that were doing their jobs.
And if you're going to be arrested over and over again, you really kind of have to have that attitude about it. Because, sure. I mean, at the end of the day, they are just doing their job. Of course, we know that's a terrible reason to do the job that they right do. But at the end of the day, they're human beings just like we are.
Exactly.
So, absolutely, you have to have that attitude. And I don't have that kind of attitude. I'm much more like Mark Edge, where I would be yelling and screaming.
Right.
So, I would not be good at that at this stage of my life.
Right. And so, that was what, you know, inspired me to come up here, and everybody's got their own reasons. In your case, you got pulled up here by your wife, Kendall. You were telling us she's been very excited about moving to New England for a long time.
Right.
So how did she come across the – was it her who came across the Free State Project?
Yeah, she came across the Free State Project. I think what really drew her to the North Country was – we were talking earlier about the weather. You see the mm-hmm. four seasons here. That was her first pull. And then I think once she started doing more research, then she kind of ran into the Free State Project. And I think how she actually found the whole porcupine is really funny. She looked at great places to raise a black kid set. And for whatever reason, New Hampshire showed up.
Huh.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
I mean, it's at the top of so many lists right these days. It's incredible how many lists at the top of. Of course, my wife and I did a lot of that research before we moved.
Right.
And of course, we found this was the best place to raise a family.
To raise a family. I'd heard it was the best place to raise a family. I didn't hear specifically that black kids were, you know, the best.
And I was like, really?
Yeah, it's so fascinating.
That's great.
Well, it is a great state. There's no question about that.
Well, you know, freedom works.
It does.
And it has worked well for New Hampshire over the years. And it's, the system of government that we have here with the 400 state representatives, it's so easy for the average person to get elected here, and it's $100 a year paycheck, so it doesn't attract any of the professional politicians or lawyers that those positions normally attract in all the other states where they get paid real well and they got office staff. Here, if you're a state representative, you get a locker.
Right.
That's what you get in the state house. You don't have a secretary.
And $100 a year.
That's it. You don't have an aide. You don't have any kind of staff whatsoever.
Well, that's how we
bucks
really have those citizen politicians.
Right.
I mean, you know, people talk about that from the early part of this country where we had citizen politicians, but you really do have that here. We didn't even have that in Arkansas. I mean, it's a, you know, podunk state. It's relatively poor. But even there, we had your career politicians.
Yeah.
And that's all that they wanted to do with their lives. Here you see very, very little of that, except maybe in the federal races, of course, and the higher governor and things like that. But your average state rep, I have never met a career state rep in the state yet. So
yeah, many of them are very down to earth.
Absolutely.
You can talk to them. They'll listen to you. And actually, you know, as Daryl Perry has found out with LibertyLobby.info, his new lobbying firm, they pay attention and they take some of his ideas and they implement them. So, you know, we can really make a difference, and we are already making a difference up here. So you moved up, you brought the whole family up with you. You're already, doing entrepreneurial stuff, buying property up there and, you know, launching a new business, going to sell some soul food, which I'm excited about. That, now, that'll give me a reason to go to Berlin.
Absolutely.
You know, the only other reason I had to go to Berlin was Walmart, but I've never really needed to go because you can go to Big Lots
I do miss good soul food because we were right across the river from Memphis, Tennessee. And of course, you can get some really good soul food in Memphis, Tennessee. So I certainly miss that.
Or y'all can bring it out here and set it up. That way nobody has to go
there
to Berlin.
There you go.
That's the plan for
next year?
Nice. Yeah, next year.
All right. I'm down.
I'll be by.
You got my pre-commitment right now.
You take Bitcoin, right?
Well, we were talking about that. You're not into Bitcoin yet, or what's your status?
I don't completely understand it fully. But
you're going to understand it better by the time you leave this table.
Right. I know my wife, she knows more about it than I do. And we do have future plans to even put Bitcoin inside our building once we get everything up and operational. So,
cool. Yeah, it's for listeners that don't know, Bitcoin is a decentralized currency. It was not created by any banks or any governments in the world, and it can't be stopped. The government cannot shut it down.
And they'd have to shut down the entire internet.
Yep, which
and
is pretty unlikely.
You could still have hard wallets that you could do business with if you had to.
Yep, and Bitcoin.com is the best place to go to learn more about Bitcoin. Maybe you are brand new to it and you want to learn the basics. They've got that over at Bitcoin.com. They'll recommend different wallet software to you. You do have to have a wallet in which you then sort of keep your Bitcoin. sort of. It doesn't actually stay in your wallet. Right. The wallet's just your private key that allows you access to that Bitcoin on the cloud. So even if you lose your phone, as long as you've gotten, as long as you've backed up your wallet, you're good. So you can drop the phone in a lake or, right. you know, whatever, and you can, you know, sort of reinitialize the wallet later on. It's an amazing technology, and we're big fans of it here on Free Talk Live. So go and check out Bitcoin.com and get the latest news about Bitcoin over at news.bitcoin.com, where Daryl had brought us the headline yesterday that the SegWit 2X proposal has been on the rise as far as the number of miners that are mining it. We now have over 70% of the blocks that are being mined in the Bitcoin blockchain that are signaling for this New York agreement, the SegWit 2X. So it's starting to look really good. It looks like there may actually be a usable future for Bitcoin. They may be able to fix this thing. May not be too late to save Bitcoin as the number one cryptocurrency.
There's already been so many people jump off that, you know, I think at this point you're still going to have those hardcore, you know, those hardcore Bitcoiners who are always going to stick with it and consider it a place to hold value instead of actually use it as a currency.
Right.
But I think that a lot of those people who use the currencies day to day have already had to jump off. I mean, I don't hold any Bitcoin. I have Dash and I have Ether to use here this weekend because I'm not going to, you know,
because it's more useful.
Right. I'm not going to buy a $2 cup of coffee with a $1.50 or $2 Bitcoin.
It's crazy.
I can't do it.
It's crazy.
Right.
So, Kendall, you are the organizer or one of the organizers of the upcoming Porcupine Freedom Festival kicking off tomorrow at this very Rogers campground. And you poor, poor man. How did they talk you into this?
He's a sucker.
Right. You see, I got quiet. Like,
because it's a big responsibility. It's a lot of work. And, of course, everybody's complaining about something. And
right.
you're the guy they're going to come complain to.
Sure.
So,
right.
Are you looking forward to this weekend?
Not really.
No, it's going to be fun.
No, I think it's going to be fun. Yeah. And, you know, we, in all honesty, it's a good team that's already here. A lot of people transferred over from last year. So I think it'll go smoothly.
What are you looking forward to the most?
I don't know if I can say it on the radio.
If it doesn't have the F word, the S word, or the N word.
No. In all honesty, I'm looking forward to most just being able to get out and actually meet some of the people.
Yeah.
Last year, I really didn't have a chance to do that. I kind of stayed shied away from just meeting a lot of people, but now I'm kind of here now, so I have to get out there and see who is who and let people see who I am.
Yep.
And I just love the sense of community that Porkfest kind of creates. You know, I think you spoke on that earlier.
It's all about the people.
That's why we keep coming. We're running the main pavilion, so I'll by default see a few of the talks, but I'm not going to actually be going to any of the talks. I'm here to see my family.
You're right.
Yeah. This intentional family that we've joined and helped create. That's why I'm here.
Yep. Kendall, thanks for coming on Free Talk Live, man. I appreciate the discussion.
No problem.
I'm sure we'll have you back at some point in the future.
Oh,
thanks,
yeah.
Kendall.
Appreciate
we're coming up from Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground for Somalia Fest and Shire Fest, the final day of those festivals, the first year for them. It's been great getting to connect and reconnect with liberty-loving folks from all around the country, many of whom have already moved to New Hampshire or are planning to move or just moved this week or within the last few days.
And I've already met a couple that have said they are moving soon, so that's
excellent.
Great.
Yes. And Roger Paxton with me. I'm Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live. Roger, the host of the Lava Flow podcast, which you can get at the Lava Flow.com. We're talking to interesting characters and folks that are here at the festival, and I saw Ed walking by from Little Zoe's Pizza. He's Ed Forrester, and Ed, welcome to Free Talk Live.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. We met at Little Zoe's because you are in Keene, New Hampshire, where I happen to
live. Yes.
And I'd caught wind that this really awesome pizza place was at Porkfest last year, and that they started taking Bitcoin during Porkfest.
Yep.
Tell me the story there. What happened last year to you guys? Because you'd never been to Porkfest before last year.
No, we'd never been to Porkfest before, and obviously we had never used Bitcoin before as well. Our initial impetus for coming here wasn't really about the Free State Project or anything specifically, other than an opportunity to sell pizza.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I learned about what you guys were, and I said, well, wait a second, I know these people.
You like freedom,
you know,
too.
I mean, I'm going to get along with everybody there.
That's awesome.
You know,
that's
I mean, fantastic. And it was just, I came here and I was just so happily surprised by the experience. It was just such a great group of people.
I mean,
everyone is so polite. Everyone is so nice. This is unlike any other festival I've ever been to, as far as the attitudes of the people that generally are attending.
Well, we're very glad to have you back.
Well, thank you.
I was telling you during the break that it is my kid. It's about the only thing he will eat at Porkfest because he's a very picky eater. But he will eat Zoe's pizza every day that he's here.
That's outstanding. He loves it.
And your daughter, just she's the sweetest thing. I assume Zoe's your daughter.
Yes, Zoe's my daughter.
She's the sweetest thing. Yep. She works her tail off. She's amazing.
She does. She's quite the character, and she's really developing her marketing skills and her sales skills and her attention to detail and all the things necessary for running a business.
Well, during the rain yesterday, of course, my son was buying pizza. And during the rain, you invited him in.
Yep.
So my son himself, he sells food at markets. He sells hot dogs and stuff. And he was so excited to see the inside of what you guys do because his dream is to own a food truck. One day. So he was so excited about
it. He was very curious. He was asking us about everything inside. So this is where you do that? Yeah. And that's where you do this? Wow, this is really cool. I like this.
Yeah, he was very excited. He had to come and tell us all about it.
Oh, that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
And it is a cool truck. You were telling me that the ovens actually go out of the back of the unit, so that way the heat doesn't at all go into the
Absolutely,
truck.
Absolutely.
That's
brilliant. I was lucky enough to find these ovens, and it turns out that the guy who designed them is out of Pepperell, Mass. He happens to be an engineer and a pizza lover, and this is his third generation. He tried to retail them out to the general public. That was in 2010, and that didn't really work out so well for him, and I bought the majority of his ovens from him. He gave me a pretty good deal. Now, going back to what I do, we're primarily a take-and-bake restaurant.
Right.
Meaning that we don't have ovens in our shop at all. And our focus is just premium product. The idea being that you come in, you design, and we'll assist in building your perfect pizza, and then you take it home and you bake it perfectly.
And that also helps people avoid the prepared food tax here in New Hampshire.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
hey, it's a grocery item, brother. It's a grocery
That's
item.
That's great. That's
Nothing is close to being done. You cannot eat my food out the store. You've got to go home and cook it.
Yeah, it's absolutely not prepared.
And y'all been around for like half a decade now.
Well, six years now we've been in this location.
Which means it's working. Because in the restaurant business, most of them, 80% of them, as I understand it, don't make it past the first year, and the other 80% don't make it past, year number two or five.
Well, don't get me wrong. We've been struggling in the beginning, just like any new business. We worked our tails off, and now we're finally being able to catch our breath, basically, and expand a little bit. The mobile food trailer that we have to do festivals, to do weddings, to do private functions, private parties is a nice addition, and we want to expand in that direction.
Yeah, I love being able to go to the food truck and actually get a hot little Zoe's pizza.
And they're going to come out piping hot. And so I had the hot Italian sausage yesterday.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic. Fabulous stuff.
And it's just big enough. I was able to eat the whole thing. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to eat the whole thing.
But as we like to say, it's enough to share unless you're hungry.
Yes.
And then there's not enough
to
spare.
I like that. I like that very much.
And it's really good stuff, too. So the hardest part whenever I go to, because I'm in Keene, I get to actually go to their shop.
Right?
Mm-hmm. The hardest part is deciding what to order. Y'all have such a big menu, and it's a little overwhelming. Oh my God, what do I get this time?
Absolutely. We have five different styles of crust. We have 12 different sauces and over 70 toppings.
It's crazy.
But we do try to help you out. We have on one side of our menu a bunch of combinations with some brilliant names so you can keep them memorized in your head. And then we even point out which ones are
The red dragon.
Oh, yeah.
What's that one?
Okay, now the red dragon, it's hot. And it's one of those things because there's so much garlic in it, man. It's a combination thing. It not only is it spicy inside, but it's spicy to everyone else around you after you've had it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm a garlic fan, so I would love that.
You're going to love it. It's loaded.
It's really spicy, too. Yeah. Like for New England, this is like real spicy. Yeah.
We get a great tasso ham from North Country Smokehouse. We put pepperoni on it. We put hot cherry peppers, hot Italian sausage, as well as loads of garlic. And then we just top it off with some crushed red pepper. And it's just the combination of all those things together is just outstanding.
I'm going to have to come to Keene and try that.
It's my favorite so far that I've had.
Awesome. And you take Bitcoin in the actual stores.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Ian helped us out with that. I really appreciate that. He was a guiding light in that whole area as far as getting us on board. Prior to that, we were just doing the old, what do you call it?
QR code.
Yeah.
And it's that's what they do over at Area 23 in Concord. And It's a risky thing because you have to trust your customer to get it right.
And your employees, too, just to make sure that they're following through to make sure that the transaction actually happened. You know?
And my kids use QR codes for their – because they do it at the markets around here. And they use a QR code. And for them, that works just well.
But
for my wife, who's now starting a jam business, GraniteGourmetFoods.com.
Wonderful.
She's doing Bitcoin, and we're about to get her set up with a POS and all of that as well, just because it's much more advanced than what my kids do.
And so simple. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and you know right away the transaction happens. Yeah, exactly. Hey. You know, it's all done.
Yeah. So it's important. And, you know, if you're accepting payments from customers, the customer may be nice. They may be a good person. Yeah. They may not be trying to scam you, but they might hit an extra zero or one fewer zeros.
Absolutely.
And then they send you 10 cents or $100 instead of $10. And you don't know it until later because you don't have any kind of way to easily check. So you got to have a point of sale system. And one of the real struggles that we've had, you know, behind the scenes, we were talking yesterday about the Bitcoin geek war that has been happening. I don't know if you're aware of this yet.
But, I'm getting a taste of it. I'm seeing there's a lot of options out there.
I'm gonna be working up an email to all of the Bitcoin accepting merchants in the Keene area because I've helped with a lot of them come on board, and just kind of explaining what's happening and, you know, what are the possibilities for the future, because these next several weeks for Bitcoin are going to be a very interesting time. And so, you know, what I really want to see happen is a point of sale system that works for one of the other currencies. Because if Bitcoin continues to be broken, it's going to be a problem. So, like, right now the average fee is about $2.
Right.
And that's crazy.
It is.
It didn't used to be that way.
Right.
A year ago, when you were here, it was probably no more than like 5 cents or something
that.
So the fees have shot up like insane, and it can't keep going like that, or no one's going to want to buy stuff with Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
So we're working on, you know, options, and Steven Zeiler has something really cool that he's working on right now for Dash, and I can't say anything.
Well,
more.
I've had to set up a Dash wallet for my kids for their business, because when you're buying a $2 hot dog, a $2 fee on top of that, It's not practical.
It's not
going to happen.
Not, no.
So I'll be in touch with that. And,
Outstanding.
Ed
Outstanding.
Forrester from Little Zoe's Pizza, thanks for coming on Free Talk.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
If you're ever in Keene, New Hampshire, go see him.
Yeah,
thank you. Absolutely.
Bitcoin.com is of the opinion that the current Bitcoin Core development team is not taking satisfactory steps to ensure the growth and advancement of Bitcoin in accordance with Satoshi's vision. As community efforts to resolve these problems have failed, it is necessary to resolve them with a different approach. By using subreddit r/BTC instead of r/Bitcoin and running Bitcoin Unlimited, you are casting a vote against the current development team. Learn more at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground on what has become a rainy day. The clouds were threatening, and they are now doing what they had threatened to do. We're getting a little sprinkle. But we're still outside. We're still under the Lava Flow tent. Thank you, Roger Paxton, for the hospitality here.
Absolutely.
Not only hosting Free Talk Live, but also hosting the location for Free Talk Live. And you can get more of Roger over at thelavaflow.com. He's got his own podcast that he does on basically a once-a-week basis. So check that out. And it's Ian Freeman here from Free Talk Live. You can go to freetalklive.com, download archives. Maybe you're just now tuning in. You didn't know we were at Shire Fest and Somalia Fest for the last several days. This is day number 5 of those festivals. So if you want to go back and listen to all the great guests we've had over the weekend, they're all posted up right now for you to download at your leisure at freetalklive.com. And we were also talking with Ed Forrester from Little Zoe's Pizza. He's one of the local business owners that got turned on to Bitcoin because he came here. He just wanted to come sell some pizzas last year. But, of course, as is tends to be the case, probably within the first hour of him opening up, likely somebody came along and said, "Do you take Bitcoin?" And then probably another 10 people asked him after that. And,
well, the best part of that story for me was that he came to Porkfest and found his people. You know, he said, these are the people that I should have been around all the time, which is just fascinating. And that's the
kind of thing. He didn't even know that.
And that's the kind of thing I even find at work. You know, one of the guys that works for me, he's very liberty oriented and, you know, didn't know any of this was going on in the state. And he's very friendly to what we do. And he's, you know, kind of found his people with us. So it's fantastic.
Well, there's a lot of that here in New Hampshire. And Matt Phillips is our next guest here from the Free State Project. You are the current president of said Free State Project. And how many years have you lived up here now?
Lived in New Hampshire. Yeah. I moved about 4 years ago.
Okay.
In fact, I just had Facebook remind me that 4 years ago I was here at Porkfest.
Wow.
So I had come to Liberty Forum, came to Porkfest. A few months later, I was living here.
anybody who's been up here for long enough knows that, you know, we are surrounded in New Hampshire by these New Hampshire natives who really are freedom-loving people. Right. They really have it in their blood. Almost
a lot of them, and of course, yeah. Then you have the Granite State Progress, which, you know,
they aren't from around here.
Well, they're not. You're right. The leads are not, but still, you do have some people that are. Well, you guys deal with it in Keene, of course. Yeah. You do have some natives that are, you know, not as happy about it. But for the most part, the average New Hampshireite that I talk to absolutely embraces freedom and liberty and what we try to do here. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we pick New Hampshire for a reason. Right. It's not that we're coming in and invading with some foreign idea of how things should be run. We're just reinforcements for the basic foundational libertarian culture that has existed in this state, you know, for hundreds of years, literally now.
Well, my favorite bumper sticker that I see at these events is the Keep New Hampshire Awesome bumper sticker, which is absolutely what we're trying to do here. No question.
And make it more awesome. Yeah. I mean, what I want to see happen is for New Hampshire on the list of the Freedom in the 50 States that Cato published this year, we were at number one, which is good. But we'd been at number four as of like 2 years before that. So it's good to be back at number one, but obviously there's not much of a difference between number one and number two as far as the scores are concerned the state's got. So I want New Hampshire to be way above the number two.
I actually
state.
Just asked Jason Sorens a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know, what is that going to stay as just a 1 through 50 ranking, or are you going to start scoring it so that people can start to see how much ahead of the rest of the pack New Hampshire
Maybe
is.
Maybe do it in a percentage or
they
something.
They do. They have that score. They have
you
that
have to
score.
Dig into it a little bit, but to make it a little more clear that, you know, if number two is at 100, we're at, you know,
200,
300. I don't know how
whatever,
you know,
the case may. Well, and I definitely think that New Hampshire is going to be on top again this year because of the successes we've had this year with constitutional carry, the Bitcoin bill, cannabis decriminalization.
Really,
so I definitely
some
think
of
we'll
the education
be on
stuff.
Educate, absolutely. I think there's no question we'll be on top.
Business
again.
Taxes are continuing to be ratcheted down. Yep. Although interesting point, I was just talking to Kate Baker, who's one of the big education choice activists here.
Yep.
She's a native, and she works for a children's scholarship fund. They raise money to fund kids going to private charter schools and private schools to get out of the public school system.
Fantastic.
And there was a bill that was passed several years ago that allows corporations to donate money to that and deduct it from their corporate tax that they have to pay here in New Hampshire. It's a little complicated on the numbers, but it's basically, you can basically, if you're a business owner here, you can basically completely eliminate your business tax by donating to this organization that takes kids out of public school and puts them into private schools or charter schools.
Wow.
So if you're a business owner and you're thinking about moving to New Hampshire and you're looking at those business taxes and you're thinking that they might still be kind of high, right? We're just now down to just below where Massachusetts are.
Right.
Okay. Forget it. If you have any profits or revenues that would fall under either the business profits tax or business enterprise tax, you can donate those away and deduct them completely for a really good cause. And there's no cap on that. So if she were to raise however much money we spend on education in New Hampshire, she'd be able to take all the kids out.
That's incredible. And, you know, public schools is something that I rail against on my show a lot because, you know, I homeschool my children.
Right.
And I went through public school, unfortunately. I actually did a show this morning. The one that released at thelavaflow.com was about an article just a couple of years ago where 260,000 kids were either restrained or put in a seclusion room in public schools in this country. And that's very low. You know, there was very low reporting of that, too. I mean, there were actually
the exclusion room. That sounds like solitary confinement.
Well, they call it. Yeah. So we're actually, what they're doing is we're torturing kids kids in
solitary
in public school.
Is considered torture.
Absolutely. So I'm so glad to hear something like that, getting kids out of these government indoctrination centers. Fantastic.
Yeah, and in fact, I just was chatting with her a couple days ago. She's currently running a matching campaign for donations, so if you're out there, check her out. It's Children's Scholarship Fund. I'm not sure if that's the website, but you'll have to Google it.
From New Hampshire.
They're a national organization, but so she runs the New Hampshire chapter. So if you're donating, just make a note that it's for New Hampshire, and she'll get it.
Now, if we can just get the property taxes lowered for people who homeschool like I do, I would be. I'd be
the thing about property taxes, though, is you can optimize for that too. If you're thinking about moving to New Hampshire, you can pick a town where they've you know, managing tightly their finances and they've got low relative property tax.
And there are several towns like that,
and so there are many towns like that. You can also buy a smaller property. Right. If property tax is like the big hit that you're going to take.
Or you can buy in Berlin where they cost next to nothing.
Well, but their taxes are fairly high. So,
but still.
Right. Yeah, when you're paying high taxes on something.
Or out on the seacoast, there's a couple of towns. Newington, which is a pretty industrial town. Or Newcastle, which is, you know, you're going to pay a lot of money for a property there. But their tax rates are
really low. Now, where did you choose to live?
I actually landed in Bedford, which is a suburb of Manchester.
It's like the soccer mom community.
It's very much soccer mom, Bedford Lee Hills.
That fits you for some reason.
I'm not sure I'm going to end up stay there permanently.
You're renting or buy a house?
I bought a condo, so I'm in a townhouse there just because I got so busy so quickly with the activism that I haven't had time to, you know, look for a nice piece of land a little bit farther out and build a nice little solar off-grid house.
Nice.
But that's the plan eventually. I'll probably keep both, but Bedford's all right. It's really easy to get into Manchester. Right. It's really easy to jaunt up to Concord for any of the legislative stuff. Can, you know, dash over to the seacoast, 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad.
Not even too far to get out to Keene. So it's really centrally located. In fact, I looked this up. About 90% of New Hampshire's population is within a 50-mile radius of Manchester.
Oh, Manchester.
Of Manchester, yeah. So if
Is the population center.
And that's part of why we chose New Hampshire over like a state like Wyoming, where everything is so spread out.
We were talking about that earlier on the show.
You can't drive around.
And New Hampshire, were talking about the wannabes, the competitors to the Free State
Wyoming
Project.
But here in New Hampshire, where there's a Liberty meetup pretty much every day, every other day, you know, all year long, it's really easy to drive over here to this one, drive over here to that one. Sometimes the first Saturday of the month, it's like four in a row.
Really?
And so you just...
There's a lot.
You just got to drive around.
There's a lot.
And that was very overwhelming for Jess and I when we were thinking about moving up here. We were looking at those Liberty calendars that are out there about New Hampshire. It's like, there's literally something every day.
If you want to. Yeah,
we weren't even having something every month in Arkansas.
And we
had a pretty active Libertarian Party. So it was very overwhelming at first. But, of course, you get here and you want to go to all of them. You can't.
You
have to pick and choose. Yeah. But, yeah, it's been an incredible, incredible year and a half.
And it's amazing. I mean, just libertarians can't even really understand. I mean, it's hard to fathom what it's like when there are thousands of us in one place. And, you know, you get these objections of like, oh, there's all this drama.
Right.
No, there's not. There really isn't.
There's drama on Facebook.
Yeah.
There's always drama on Facebook.
I think Facebook's one of the worst things that has ever happened to this movement.
Right.
Any
movement.
And I know you've been really active in trying to find alternatives and recruit people. And I support all those efforts. I worry about the same thing, which is we're so heavily dependent on Facebook for a lot of our organization and collaboration. And it's a potential trap, right?
It
it's
is.
A potential pit.
Well, let's and it's talk designed about, that way.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because it is. It's designed to basically promote drama and somehow make it so people can't pay attention to the important things.
Right.
But we can get back into that and what some of the other options are, because it is important to get our content off of their platform, because you don't want them holding an axe over your head in any way.
Right.
There's more coming up here. This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground in the middle of a rainstorm, but we're going to stay on the air. This is Free Talk Live. More on the way. This is Free Talk Live, and we're at Somalia Fest and Shire Fest 2017 at Rogers Campground, just the day before the beginning of Pork Fest 2017, the Porcupine Freedom Festival, and that is, of course, put on by the Free State Project. Definitely not too late to get out, to come out and meet some cool folks who are going to be here throughout the weekend. Matt Phillips is with us from the Free State Project. He is the president of said Free State Project. It's Ian and Roger here on Free Talk Live in our outdoor studio, brought to you by the Lava Flow podcast. This weekend here. The weekend's been fantastic. So many great people, so many good times, and things are just getting rolling here as we've got Matt on the line. We were talking about Facebook just a moment ago, and it is my contention that Facebook has been one of the worst things that has ever happened to the movement. It gives you the illusion that you're connecting with people, right? It's social media.
Right.
And there are a lot of people on Facebook. So, I mean, it is a true statement that there are a lot of people there, that's where everyone is. And, well, there are exceptions. There are people who will refuse to use Facebook. But there are a lot of folks there. And so you feel like, oh, yeah, I can reach all these people. But you can't. You can put everybody into the same group, but they won't see all the posts.
Right.
They won't see the most important stuff. You can send an invite to a bunch of people. Half the time they won't see it. It's just they want you to pay. They want you to pay to promote the things that are important to you, when, you know, you shouldn't have to. If you've got a community and a tool that is supposed to allow you to reach that community, that tool shouldn't be debased, which is what they've done with Facebook over the years. It was better in the past.
It was, absolutely. If you did something on your company page, for example, it would actually reach, you know, much more people than it is now. They absolutely forced you to do that payment now.
I recently was speaking to one of Facebook's largest advertisers, and they basically said that the guidance they've been giving is to expect essentially zero organic reach.
And the organic reach is when you post something the people who like your page
it would show up in their feed just because they were interested in it, but if
without paying
yeah. without you sponsoring your post to get it, you know, bump it up higher yeah. and get it into more people's feeds, you should basically, that what they're saying, you know, what Facebook is basically saying is don't expect that to ever happen going forward.
It's garbage. It really is.
Well, I mean, from some perspective, it does, for example, when Jess and I were considering moving up here, it really helped us a lot to connect with porcupines and to ask questions because, you yep. know, I was terrified of the winters. So we asked questions. Okay, do I need, you know, snow tires? Do we need these sorts of things? And it did help from that respect. Of course, that same thing could have been done in a forum.
Any other forum.
Sure, right. yeah. sure.
And the Free State Project still has a forum. It's still there, but there's hardly anyone using it. The Shire Society still has a forum. It's doing a little better than it was. I installed some new software in it in December.
And you've been promoting it, too.
And I've been promoting it. But I promoted it previously. Nobody cared. But the new software, I think, is helping because it's made it a more modern experience. You can get the notifications popping up from your browser. Whenever somebody responds to a thread, I'll get a little pop-up that I see, even if I'm not on the site. Of course, emails, you know, come in as well for updates. But it's also got easy, like old forums, it was hard to implement images in your posts and things like that. This has made it much more modern, where you can easily link in images and YouTube videos and any link from a news post or some other website. It gives you a little summary like you kind of expect to see from social media. So it kind of has that Facebook-y feel to it with a lot of those same features of ease of use, but it doesn't have, you know, anybody holding an axe over your head. Nobody's, you know, saying, oh, well, you better do what we say or else we're going to cut your access. As we've seen, many of our friends have been banned from Facebook for 30, 60, you know, 90 days for saying something offensive.
I'm terrified that for, you know, those of us who are, you know, activists or who are in charge of organizations that are really dependent on it, like the Free State Project, that, you know, for no known reason, Facebook could just one day, you know, say, sorry, you violated our terms and conditions, and we're shutting you down.
There goes your 100,000 fans.
Right. And there's no, well, that and our, you know, 9,000 people that we have in the Free State Project group itself, and then plus the Porkfest page, and we've got
so many,
literally hundreds of groups. Right. And if we don't have access to that, like, to some degree, we're going to be dead in the water.
Yeah. And well, here's what I'd suggest you do. Go through those groups and see how many of them have had a post in the last year. Because I guarantee you, you know, the ones that are the most popular, yeah, there's still some action there.
I know a lot of them are somewhat active for at least a handful of people.
Many of them are dead, though.
Yeah.
If you go in there, you'd be lucky, you'd be hard-pressed to find a post within the last year in most of these activist groups. And it's not to say those people aren't doing activism. It's just the groups aren't helping facilitate them, so they've stopped using the groups for that purpose.
And then here's another factor, too, which is, I would say the number two and three social media platforms our Twitter and Instagram right now, right?
Yep.
Well, Instagram, guess what, is now owned by Facebook,
right?
So great integration, but, you know, if Facebook decides to shut you down because, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's not down with your politics, then you're screwed. Yep. And then Twitter, you know, I think Twitter's really languishing right now. It's like, people are getting tired of that. They can't get any money.
They're going to go out of business at some point.
They have to.
Yeah. Well, and Twitter's worse than Facebook as far as the
quality of dialogue.
It is a horrendous place to actually communicate. Well, when you're having to do it in 140 characters, that's a terrible decision anyway. I find it
to be hard to use.
Sometimes
somebody will tag me on Twitter, and so I can easily see what they're tagging me in, but half the time they're responding to somebody else's tweet, and I'm like, how do I see the whole thread? I'm not a dummy when it comes to technology. If you dig around enough, you can find it, but it's not like you can just easily see.
It's not very intuitive, absolutely.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And to bring it kind of back home, too, to look at it from sort of a philosophic, practical perspective, I think one of the big things that's missing is reputation. Right. And we talk a lot about how we would organize ourselves in a society, you know, private society. Reputation is always a big piece of that. And Facebook, you know, if you're just hopping into the Free State Project group, for example, and you're asking questions like, do I need snow tires or whatever? You have no idea who's answering or what their agenda is whether they're giving you good information or not.
You hope that the admins of the group have done some weeding out, but that's not always the case.
If you've got 9,000 people in that group, I'm telling you right now, half of them aren't Free Staters. They're probably just looky-loos or trolls or whatever.
Sure.
So I think that's a, you know, looking to the future of what I would want to see in a platform that would facilitate that kind of thing. I think that that's a really key piece of that puzzle.
Well, we found one recently. So, you know, each platform sort of has its different strengths. So the Shire Society forums is a good forum platform, and you've got the Pax Libertas sub forum in there now, and Free Talk Live. We've been promoting that there's a Free Talk Live sub forum, and so it originally was intended only for Shire Society members,
right,
to communicate and kind of connect with folks who are moving here and you know, having effective conversations where if somebody's coming in to start drama, you can move that thread somewhere else. This, to me, is the weakest part, one of the weakest part about Facebook groups, is they give you a ban hammer, and that's your only tool for moderation.
Right.
So if somebody comes into the group and they're, you know, posting something that is mostly useless, you know, you could just go ahead and delete that thread if it's causing drama or whatever, but then that causes more drama because then people are like, oh, well, why'd you delete that thread? Blah, 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 blah. And then five more threads get posted. It's such a waste of time. On a forum, you can have an area where there's like drama zone. And then, you know, there's the productive zone. Yeah. And so if somebody posts drama in the productive zone, you can just move right. the thread.
Well, if your only tool is a ban hammer, then everybody looks like a troll. So
right.
there you go.
And so, you know, there are ways to deal with those things easily with forums, with every forum yeah, software absolutely. That's ever been produced. But Facebook doesn't have that. It doesn't matter if you moderate more than one group. You cannot move a post from one group to another group. This is basic functionality that it doesn't have.
I end up doing that a lot where somebody posts something to one group, but it belongs in this other group, right. and I have to message them yeah. and say, sorry, I had to delete that, but please repost it in this other. It's like
right. it's so manual. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's terrible. And so for and then for chat, what we found recently is a program called Riot, which is really neat. So some people have been
using... It's still using, buggy is my issue with it.
It is buggy. It's in beta.
Yeah.
So
it's got the right idea, though.
But what they're doing is they've taken... I don't know if you guys familiar with Slack.
Yeah.
So Slack, for listeners that aren't familiar, is a corporation that offers basically a glorified IRC chat room, group of chat rooms right. for businesses to use for, you know, group communications within
and it's gotten a tremendous amount of traction in places like Silicon Valley and the corporate world. Like every yeah. company is using it.
A lot of cryptocurrency companies are using
it. It's fine. You know, it's a fine platform, yeah. but it's their free version. They limit you to 10,000 posts or right. 10,000 characters or whatever it was. Maybe it's 10,000 posts. But anyway, there's a hard limit that once you go beyond that, you can't search anything older than those 10,000 posts.
So it's not good for archiving.
So it's terrible for that.
Unless you're paying the money, which it's,
right,
well,
it's not terribly
expensive. We actually have for the Free State Project, we're using it. They have a nonprofit plan that basically uh-huh. gives you the first tier paid program for free.
Oh, that's nice.
So we've managed to avoid some of those limitations. But at the same
time, it's expensive though. But if you were to pay for it, it's $5 a head per month.
But even for us, it's free for us to use. It's still every time I got to get a new volunteer, I mean,
you got to register them.
Register them and install the software, get them remember to turn on notifications on their phone.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Facebook chat and Signal and
Wire
and all,
you know,
all these others. It's like I got 40 places I got to check my messages every morning.
Right.
Well, the nice thing about this Riot is it's very much like Slack, but it's decentralized. And it's open source.
And it's encrypted.
So it has all these things that Signal or that Slack doesn't have. If the government comes to Slack and says, we want to see all the Free State Project communications, they got it all.
Yep.
And they're going to send it over to them. They can't do that with Riot. And Riot is a free app. It's cross-platform. You can go to riot.im. And it's actually, I believe it can link into Slack. And it can link into IRC.
Oh, nice.
So it's sort of backward compatible in that way. And there's no membership fee because, again, you can run your own server.
Right.
Which is awesome, which means you can't get shut down. More coming up. Free Talk Live.
If you want to move to the Free State and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in Liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
This is Free Talk Live. We are at Rogers Campground for the final day of Somalia Fest and Shire Fest 2017 as the Porcupine Freedom Festival is getting set up for their fest, which is kicking off tomorrow. They got the tents rolling in. The bathrooms are getting all the infrastructure
right.
set up today. Yeah, the showers were a cool addition. That seemed like a really smart thing to do. You guys have a portable shower truck that came in a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And those were free to campers, right?
Yes.
Expanding the shower options, because there are camp showers on the campsite here, but as you might expect, they're nasty.
Yeah.
Camp showers.
They're a little rustic, and sometimes the water, we go through a lot of water when you get a lot of people here. So. Yeah.
Sometimes the water breaks or whatever, and they have to fix it, and then you can't use the showers for a while.
Yeah, there's been some sewage issues in the past, from what I understand, which is that's a little creepy.
It's
a little
challenging,
nasty.
But now we got the shower truck, and we got the portageons, and
a little more comfortable.
Makes facilities a lot
little easier.
Sure.
Yeah. Matt Phillips is with us. It's Ian and Roger in the studio here. The studio, by the way, brought to you by the Lava Flow podcast, thelavaflow.com. Go check out Roger's show over there. Thanks for hosting with me.
Oh, I've had a blast. Thanks for having me, for sure.
I mean, I'm sure Daryl would have done it if I'd asked him to, but he's running the Libertarian Party booth here, so I wanted to make sure he had a chance to get that done. And you and I, we don't get to spend enough time together.
We don't. It's been nice this week.
So this has been good. We've just kind of been talking about some of the frustrations, the challenges that the Liberty Movement faces here with communicating, and I think we kind of hit on some of the alternatives that we've come up with here. You mentioned Wire as a direct chat.
I use Wire and Signal for probably 95% of my communications now, except for people who don't have it, and that's the occasional person on Facebook that I'll have to chat with.
Right, and Signal is great. That for listeners that don't know, that was what Edward Snowden recommended after that whole thing went down for personal communications. It's encrypted text messaging, basically. And they actually, I guess they offer phone calls and video calls now.
They do. Wire does as well. The thing I like about Wire better than Signal, they both use the same back end, the Open Whisper systems. Wire has really better options for groups and stuff.
Signal's junk for groups.
It is. So we use it for a lot of the FreeCodes stuff and things like that for groups, and it's great for that. And the video, the one-to-one video, and I think it's 10-to-1 phone calls even through Wire.
Wow, incredible.
Which is pretty nice.
We've been using Telegram out in Keene for a few years now, and it's really done very, very well to get chat off of Facebook and bring it into a different platform. And it's nice because you can send files easily to a group. You can upload images and all that. And notification preferences are also very good because you can turn off notices for the groups that are too busy. So like the Keene chat, there's constant chat going on in there. Right. So I just have the notices turned off, and then I just check up on it whenever I happen to be in the app. Very, very handy stuff. All of these apps are free that we're talking about here and available. And to some extent or another have encryption. I don't trust any of them personally.
Right.
I mean, as we found out with the WikiLeaks, what was it? Mode 7? No, not Mode 7. Some sort of...
Vault 7.
Vault 7. Thank you. Vault 7. With their more recent releases, the CIA, of course, was able to intercede in your text message.
But only if they had access to the phone. Now, they had to have physical access to the phone, which, obviously if you're letting the NSA have access to your phone, you've got bigger problems to worry about.
That's true. Well, either way, if you want to keep a secret, I still wouldn't recommend putting it in over any of these methods. But anything's better than Facebook or Slack, which are these corporations which could go out of business at any time or hand over your information to the government. And so there's really, we got to find other options. And we are. And so that's good. And it's a good thing we got all these geeks in our movement because they always come up with interesting solutions and all that. Matt Phillips is with us here. He's the president of the Free State Project. Off the air, we got into the classic button-pushing conversation and the classic question of, if you could push a button right now that would end the state,
overnight.
Delete it, right? Like, eliminate the buildings, would the bureaucrats disappear too?
They would have other jobs.
Qualifications
We couldn't kill the bureaucrats, so they would have to have other jobs.
Would they instantly have a job?
That's part of the problem, right?
Yeah. Because you'd lose that infrastructure.
Yeah, what do you do with all those people, and what do you do with the functions that we currently are forced to rely on
social
the government
security,
for? Yeah,
military.
Welfare.
Police, fire.
Police, roads, all of that stuff, right? We want all that to be private, but it's not going to be private overnight. Like, we got to, you have a road out here and it's currently a publicly owned road. You want to privatize it. Well, how do you do that? What's the actual protocol process for how to go about privatizing it in a way that is sort of fair and equitable so that the people who are served by that road don't get screwed by somebody else having, the classic example, right, is if you have a property, you privately own it, but you're surrounded by other private owners who...
They don't want to let you out.
They don't want to let you out. So what do you do? So how do you privatize all of these assets? How do you come up with the alternative social institutions that are needed in order for our society to sort of, have basic functioning? How do I know whether I can trust you as a stranger to enter into some sort of economic transaction.
Right.
Now, Roger, you said you'd press the button.
I would, and I absolutely know that it would be a struggle. There would, be, without question, be a struggle. But any time that you have a major change, when there's coups, the Russian coup, other coup, you always have some sort of an interim period that's a struggle, that's a challenge for people. Some people, will fall off the radar. Some people won't get services and help that they need. And that's going to tragically happen, I think, no matter how it's done. Even if it's done slowly, I think that you're going to have that. But it would obviously be aggravated if it happened overnight.
Well,
but
the fact is that people are losing their lives now because of government programs like war on drugs and all of that. So you got to kind of balance those, like which one's going to be worse. And also, if you are promoting, the sort of longer term transition, slowly, what is it when you go off of heroin, right? It's
weaning off,
weaning off, right.
That might not be a viable path, right? That might not be possible.
Well, the Libertarian Party, for example, has been trying it for 40 years, and look at how few successes that they've had. I mean, of course, we've had some successes here in New Hampshire because of some of the work going on, but overall, over the 41, 42 years, it's been a dismal failure.
We've had more successes here in New Hampshire in the last decade than the Free State or than the Libertarian Party has in 40 years.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, we've got Libertarians elected here.
We do. We do, and now we have 3 state reps.
There's another consideration, too, and this is the thing that I'm actually sort of afraid of, is that we might go there anyway, right? I mean, what if we have a dollar collapse? That will essentially put the state out of business, right? Because they won't be able to pay people.
Well, they won't be able to pay people, but I think that there's enough of the patriotic ones who would still, forego that payment. Oh, I know it will come eventually, so let's get this fixed. I don't think that a dollar collapse would collapse the United States government. I think that they would either start printing something else, or they would look at Venezuela, what's going on there. It has collapsed completely, and yet they are still
going
and going worse and worse all the time. So I think that you would see that here. I think that would be worse than pushing the button, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, the button thing, it's a fun conversation to have, but it's nothing more than, an intellectual discussion, because we'll never have the button to push, and it is going to have to take a lot of hard work and a lot of convincing of people in these terribly slow and frustrating baby steps that is the political process. I mean, that's just how it is. But what we've seen here is that it's possible to do that in New Hampshire. It's impossible to do in so many places where the state is so entrenched with so many, special interests at its teat that will not let go. Here, you've got the citizen legislature we talked about earlier with the 400 state representatives who are real down-to-earth people that have real jobs, or retired folks who are making $100 a year as a state rep plus a small gas stipend, and that's it.
They're doing it for power, though, right? What power they've got.
Right. So we can make an impact, and we are. And you already ran through a brief list of some of the political successes we've had here thus far.
And that's just been since I've been here, which is incredible.
And at some point, we can gain momentum, as we keep getting more people here, let's just say we got about 20 column free staters, column libertarians, because we've got 3 libertarians, two who flipped, two state reps who flipped to libertarian this year. Third is coming within the next week or so. But there's also the other libertarians who are in the state house who are Republicans and Democrats. They felt like they had to run under those parties so they could get elected, but they're pretty principled folks. So let's just call it 20, right? So we've got
20 people out of the 400.
Out of the 400. I mean, that's a nice little contingent as is. That's enough people to break a tie. That's enough people to swing one vote one way or another. So there's some level of influence there.
I mean, I would say there's easily another 50 who, on one issue or another, maybe not all sides, will align with us. Like conservatives vote for increased gun rights, but some of the liberals go along on things like privacy issues or the drug war.
Yeah, we can get things done regardless of whether it's Democrat majority or Republican majority, because we can work with different types of people on these issues. But once we get up to 40 people, once we get up to 100 people, the game starts to change in a big way as you get more numbers in there.
Because at that point, you have a voting bloc that can really do things on their own, which is what we really need. We need that voting bloc, and that's why we need more people moving to the state, so that people can be doing
that. Well, and then you look at, on the other side of the legislature, you got the state senate, which is only 24 people. It's actually a relatively small body compared to other.
Hold that thought. We're going to come back with more Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, and we're at Rogers Campground for the final day of Shire Fest and Somalia Fest 2017. If you want to learn more about Somalia Fest, just drop on by SomaliaFest.com. We have the president of the Free State Project with us. He's Matt Phillips, and I'm Ian Freeman. And Roger,
Good to be here.
Roger Paxton joining me in the Lava Flow Studios. The weather is a little rainy at the moment. It's not coming down as hard as
it'll
it
will pass
was
over before long, I'm sure.
Earlier, but you know, we've had a little mix throughout the weekend. Mostly sunny, mostly beautiful throughout. I would say 80%, 90%.
And the rest of the week is supposed to be pretty nice too. There's going to be very little rain the rest of the week, so come on out anyway because the weather's going to clear up.
Yeah, you don't want to miss meeting some of these cool folks. So you can kind of get a feel for what it's like. This because that's really the point of these events is to bring the people together. Yeah, you can go see Patrick Byrne from Overstock, and he's great, and he's going to be the main speaker at Porkfest, and they're going to have all kinds of talks as they normally do. But you know, you were saying that you're like me, just walking around talking to people. That's
I'm here for the people. I'm you know, I can see these talks on YouTube all the time. I can follow these folks, but I'm here to meet the average libertarian here. And speaking of, what are you most looking forward to this year at Porkfest, Matt?
That's the same thing. I mean, I think we were talking a little bit earlier about this event and, how do we convince people that they actually want to move to New Hampshire? And coming to the events is a really big part of that journey of people discovering what it is we're doing here. And coming to the events and seeing what we're doing here, meeting a lot of the other activists, hearing about it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So many people come to these events and they're like, oh, I had no idea. I got to move here. I mean, it happened to me.
It's amazing how many people I met last year who moved, within just a few months after that. We had several of them move to the Free Coast because my wife and I are almost evangelists for the Free Coast area because we love the Seacoast. It is just a beautiful area. There's so much going on with entrepreneurship and families and all of that. And of course, I'm a family guy. So, that's part of what we do in our area in the Free Coast. So we had several people move to the Free Coast area, but there's something for everybody in this state. And that's what's the best part about New Hampshire. So whatever your activism is, you can find it here.
Right.
And maybe you don't even know what your activism is because I've seen that with a lot of folks that move up here. You know, when I moved here, I thought, oh, I'm going to move with a bunch of activists who are like me. Well, it turns out a lot of the people who joined the Free State Project, they love the idea of activism, but they've never actually done it before.
Because there's no opportunity to where they're from.
Yeah, what do you do? Well, you got five libertarians who come to a meeting once a month and complain about, the government and go home.
Right.
And then maybe once every 4 years, they'll run some candidates. Yeah. And that's about it in most places. Here, as you were saying, there's stuff every week, multiple events every single week, and you can't possibly attend them all. So you really do get to kind of find your place. You know, do you want to do political activism? Do you want to do outside the system stuff? You know, what is it, your area, media creation, behind the scenes? You want to run a website, program something for somebody? I mean, there's all kinds of different ways that that one can help out.
The first libertarian event that I went to in Arkansas over a decade ago now was literally my wife and I and the first district rep for the Libertarian Party of Arkansas. And that was it.
Oh,
nobody
man.
Else showed up. Jeez. The first one we went to here was Halloween of 2015 in the Seacoast area, and there were 40 people there.
That's a huge...
It was incredible. So
I think coming to this event, we got a lot of great speakers, and maybe we can just sort of run through the list here in a minute. But coming to meet... I mean, we got a 5,000-strong community here of people living in New Hampshire who are either moved here...
That includes some of the natives.
They either moved here or they already lived here, and they've signed the same, statement of intent to work towards the creation of a society in which the maximum role of government is the protection of individuals' rights to life, liberty, and property. And they're doing things... And if you don't come here and meet some of those people, you won't get it. You won't get what we're doing. You'll stay on Facebook. You'll complain and say, well, why don't you have this or that or the other thing? Why haven't you gotten rid of business taxes yet? It's like, well, we're here. We're working on it. Progress is being made. Yeah. And
you could come help.
And you could come help.
Exactly.
Or you could make it happen faster.
You could wait till we do it for you, till we do all the heavy lifting, but it would happen faster if you moved here.
God,
but
I mean,
even if we never reduce a single tax or repeal another law, you still get to come here and be part of the largest, most vibrant community of libertarians on the planet.
And the community is, I mean, obviously our goal is to work towards the freest state possible that we can have. Absolutely. There's no question. But the community is worth every bit of being here. So if you're on the fence about it, and I hate that excuse that, well, why isn't the free state already? Why is it not?
Because it's a project.
Exactly.
Because it takes time.
It's not the free state done.
Because it takes time to get this crap done. The political system is brutally slow.
Well, and not just that, but remember the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. This is not going to be something that we're going to complete and then be done with
it.
It's going to be an always constant struggle to prevent the state from trying to claw its way back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that with like the states that have legalized marijuana, where the prohibitionists keep pushing. They keep pushing to bring more restrictions back into it. And so it is a constant vigilance.
Even though most of those laws are already very restrictive to begin with, they still want more.
It's never enough. It's never enough control for those people. And so, you know, what we really need to do is create a place that the control freaks don't feel comfortable. A place where liberty is winning so consistently over time, where laws are getting repealed, government programs are getting shut down, where these statists just feel like they can't win. Like, that is the feeling that they need to have.
So it's they have to demigrate out of the state.
Right.
I'd be okay with that.
It's been happening.
The free lunch project.
That's kind of a joke. Somebody created
it. It actually exists.
Yeah, they created a website to encourage people to leave New Hampshire. And I don't know if they're willing to pay them for their ticket or whatever.
I think it was California, I think, that they're promoting. I don't know if they actually picked a state.
Maybe New York.
The perfect state for statists. Absolutely.
But that's the thing. Like, look, hey, you don't have to move that far. New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, they're right over there.
Jersey. Yeah.
You know, head on down to Florida. There's plenty of sun and warmth down there. So, I mean, if you think about it, if you're a statist and you start losing consistently, it's going to be pretty demoralizing.
Of course. Of course it's going to be. Well, and just like it was demoralizing.
Welcome to our lives.
Right. That was my life before moving up here. And, of course, we've had so many more successes here. And Arkansas was just dismal trying to get anything done.
And it's depressing, and that leads to burnout. That leads to the activists saying, screw this. I'm not going to do any of this. Why bother? Why bother?
Right. And that's pretty much where I was before I moved up here.
You were frustrated. You were burned out.
That's why I started the podcast. I was done. I wasn't going to deal with the OPR anymore. I was just going to gripe on the radio or on the podcast.
Doing something.
Well, come on, it's not real activism, but
it is. You're getting people to move.
I wish you guys could see Ian's face.
Right,
just now.
It was great. It was great. Yeah, being on the radio is not real activism. Again. Of course, I'm kidding. But you know, because I was so frustrated, that was just my outlet. I just wanted to gripe to myself, and you know, maybe have some people listen to it, because I was done until I decided to finally move up here.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think Ian probably has moved more people to New Hampshire than any other single individual activists.
I can't disagree with that at all.
I appreciate that. And you know, we need more people. This is a fact. I mean, you mentioned we've got 5,000, but you still have the 80-20 rule in effect, where a lot of people are busy. They got a family. They got a job. They can't dedicate full time to activism.
And that's great. Yeah. We still, if that's all you're going to do, then fine. You can still move here, and we're happy to have you and be part of the community.
Absolutely.
But
any amount of contribution is better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And if you get thousands of people doing a little bit, then nobody has to do a whole lot.
Well, and it's division of labor as well, because then it's not, the burden isn't on so many people, on so few people. It kind of divide that out. Absolutely. I think
so, you know, don't delay. Whether you want to join the Free State Project or the Shire Society, or you're not a joiner at all, just come up here and get, you know, moved. Get up here. Get active.
Right.
Get involved. There's so much to do. We've got a lot of way ahead of us. We're just getting started here. I know this active migration has only been going on a decade now, but we're still in the very beginning phases of this.
Yeah, the move's only been triggered for a year and a half.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's very exciting. Matt Phillips, thanks for coming on Free Talk
Live.
Thanks
so much for having me.
I'm sure we'll have you back at some point.
Yeah.
And check out his Free State Project at freestateproject.org and porkfest.com. Oh,
yep.
You wanted to mention some guest speakers real fast. You've got like 10 seconds.
we got Will Coley, Judd Weiss, Daryl Perry, Ovens O'Brien, Vin Armani, and Bella Robinson coming to do a sex work decrim panel. Dale Brown from Threat Management Center in Detroit, Derek McGill from Praxis, Matt and Terry Kibbe from Free the People, Lynn Ulbricht, of course, coming to give very sad update. This last one, Ross lost the next appeal, but hopefully it's not the end of the road.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live. We're at Rogers Campground. The sun has come out.
Finally.
It's looking beautiful, as it normally does. And Rogers is still pretty, even if it is raining.
I love the fog on the mountains.
Yeah.
It's unbeatable to look at.
Yeah. And the view here is absolutely incredible. You don't want to miss this. And you still have time to get up here. As we mentioned, Porcupine Freedom Festival, which you're going to help organize, Roger, is kicking off tomorrow. So they're gearing up for that, putting the tents together, I imagine, right now.
They are. I've been all morning, and they've got the porta potties and the the showers and all that in now. So.
Yeah, because it's going to be a bigger event than Shire Fest and Somalia Fest, which is what's been happening for the last 5 days, which is much more low key, just basically libertarians camping in the woods. And ultimately, to me, it felt a lot like Pork Fest, because I almost never went to the speeches at Pork Fest anyway, just because hanging out with folks at campsites is more interesting for me.
Right.
And so this was like that, but better, because for the first time ever, we've been able to hang out at nighttime, which we almost never could do before.
Because we're always doing the show.
Yeah, right? I would, you know, once in the week of Pork Fest, I would take one night off and go to like Buzz's Big Gay Dance Party, and that would be my one day. But now every single night, because we're recording these show segments, we get to actually hang out with people at night, and that's when a lot of the fun stuff happens. Like last night's 5 hour long music set by Will Coley, who is not only the guy from Muslims for Liberty, but also an awesome DJ.
Yeah,
I heard he did really well. I hate that I missed it.
Yeah, well, I heard he might be playing again tonight.
Oh, really? Great.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true, because apparently some people didn't like the loud pounding music till 1 a.m. But
well, you can just cut it off at 11. Yeah, it'll be fine.
That's what they were. Well, right. Some people were complaining before 11, apparently. But regardless, we had to remind them, you're not at Pork Fest. This is Shire Fest. This is Somalia Fest. So Roger Paxton is with me. I'm Ian Freeman, host of Free Talk Live. Roger, the host of the Lava Flow podcast, which is providing us the wonderful tent, the protection from the elements today as we record this episode of Free Talk Live. And Jack Shimmick, a longtime guest on Free Talk Live from these events. We always, almost always have Jack on to, because you've been going to these things forever. I mean,
2003, Pork Fest number zero.
Wow, you've been going that long.
Wasn't it called something else?
It was called Escape to New Hampshire.
Ah.
And how many people were at Pork Fest Zero?
I don't know, but there was spaces between the campsites. You had to walk through a few empty campsites before you got to anybody else's, so it wasn't anywhere near. And there was a whole bunch of other campers here, and they probably wondered what the heck we were up to. So,
when did you show up this weekend?
Saturday, I believe.
Okay,
yeah, Saturday.
So pretty early on in Shire Fest and Somalia Fest. How would you compare Shire Fest, Somalia Fest to the early Pork Fests?
There's more here than there were at the first Pork Fest, I would say. Yeah.
Okay.
You got to remember the bingo hall over here.
Yeah.
That the whole of Pork Fest, all the speakers were in there.
Mm-hmm.
The meals were in there. The exhibitors were in there, all within the one
The little bitty building. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, that's before my time. I didn't come to Pork Fest until I made the move.
What was your fourth one? Was that your first?
Would have been 2007, so I guess that would have been the fourth.
The big Sarasota move. Wasn't there about six or eight of you that came all at the same time?
Me, Mark Edge, and my girlfriend at the time, Julia, we all moved up together.
But
I think that's when Travis came and
there were
Brian
other people
Manning
from Sarasota. And... Yeah, Brian Manning and I knew each other from Sarasota. But yeah, and then Neil Connor also came up from Sarasota.
Right.
So we got a good Sarasota contingent up here in New Hampshire, which is great because the best activists have come up here.
Well, you know, it's funny. Some friends of mine from Arkansas that were involved in the OPAR with us, they moved up shortly after we did. They actually signed years before we signed.
Oh, yeah.
But we were able to move before they moved, which was great. So
yeah,
we beat
them
to it.
About this.
Kathleen and Carl Wickstrom,
And then now they're involved with the Libertarian Party of the Seacoast.
They are,
as
absolutely.
I understand it. So very cool. Now, are you going to get any other Arkansas people up here?
I'm working on it. Matter of fact, a good friend of mine is an attorney down there. And of course, we can always use more Liberty attorneys up here. He's a signer. Hoping to get him up here once he gets, you know, past some stuff he's having to deal with, and some others as well. Well, we'll have an Arkansas contingent for sure.
Excellent. Now, David Jurist, I don't know if you know him.
I didn't know him from Arkansas, but I do know him now,
And he just moved up several months ago.
Right.
So, Jack, so you were here for the very first Pork Fest, which wasn't even Pork Fest. Was it the second year that they decided to call it that?
In 2003, Escape to New Hampshire was to try to invite people to see what New Hampshire was like so they would vote for New Hampshire, because the vote came.
Oh, it didn't even happen. Wait,
right.
Oh, yeah, that was it was late 2003 when that happened.
I think it was September when the vote happened, or when it
October,
was counted.
October, September,
so
yeah.
So I think Escape to New Hampshire was just a month before the closing of the vote, something like that.
Huh, okay. So the final pitch for the state. Right. Interesting. I didn't even know that.
It apparently worked.
well, it's a persuasive thing. I mean, it was the 101 reasons that brought you into this.
It is, absolutely. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because there were so many good states that were in that vote. But looking back on all of those states and the different things that they all offered, I think it was a natural choice, the New Hampshire chosen.
And I want to give credit to, I think it was Michelle Dumas that did most of the work on the 101
Reasons.
She wrote
that up. Yeah,
I think so.
He was persuaded by the movie version.
Yeah,
which,
the movie
was a decade later.
You know, we had already looked at it. We had known about the Free State Project, but until we saw that video, we didn't sign. That was the thing that made us decide to finally sign.
Yes.
Another one under
$1,000 well spent.
Right. Another feather under your cap, right? It was only $1,000 to
produce. No, that was my co-producer. Okay. I wasn't the full-on producer. That was Vince Perfetto. Right, right. I don't know what his budget was. It was, I imagine, several $1,000s. But yeah, he asked for co-producers to step up. Me, Mark Warden, and a young lady named Carolyn stepped up and each threw in like a grand or something like that.
That's great.
To help him buy some extra equipment.
And now Vince is traveling all over Europe and just having a blast.
Back.
He will be. He will be.
Okay, good.
I should tell you a few other things about the Pork Fest. You know, sometimes people think
You're
it's always
been... historian, please.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't remember if it was the first or the second Pork Fest, but you got to keep in mind the, you know, organizing is like a hard job. It's like,
of course.
It's a grueling job. It's a thankless job.
Well, anyway, very thankless.
But one of the first organizers, Kate, I haven't seen her in a long time. She was the one that was selling the alcohol too.
Yeah.
And so, as we know, there's some like concerns about alcohol sales, whatever.
Well, it is strictly prohibited from the campground, but I hear that there is some of that that might happen. I don't know.
I've seen it happening actually already. My favorite year.
A lot
year.
Of people like to share here.
Of course. So. There is a sharing kind of economy.
It's all illegal. Technically, as I understand the New Hampshire statutes, if I were to buy a six-pack of beer and give you guys a beer, that would be a felony.
Oh, come
Even
on.
As a gift.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's my understanding. I could be misunderstanding the statutes, but that was my reading.
They do
of
have
it.
A very big monopoly over with the liquor anyway, but so I could understand
so
why
if they
get want
you,
that control.
They're going to get you.
Of course.
My favorite year, though, was where there was like some little kid who was selling alcohol from the site that he was camping at, which
wow.
was just awesome.
I'm assuming he had parental permission for that.
Yes, yes, presumably.
That's great.
And I don't know if that was the – at some point, Liquor Commission came to the campground, and they sent an undercover agent around.
Ooh.
And they went in, and instead of busting the people who were doing things, they went and they put pressure on the campground.
Of course.
And they told the campground, hey, look, this better stop, or else we're going to pull your alcohol license. And so that's how they kind of, you know, came.
I didn't realize
down.
That Rogers Campground had an alcohol license.
I think they sell beer.
Oh,
in
I didn't know that. Yeah. I have.
In the
don't
store.
Almost,
I've never looked closely, but I think they do.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I guess that makes sense. From their perspective, they have to protect their investment here. Absolutely.
So then, of course, the sales just went underground after that because it's hard. It's hard to tell libertarians what to do. They just don't like being told what to do.
Right. It's not going to happen.
You know, as Porkfest grew, I think they felt they were going to outgrow Rogers, so they started looking around for another site. And
but there is no other site. This is the biggest campground in New Hampshire.
But it's not.
Well, it's the biggest family campground privately owned.
Right.
We went for 2 years to Gunstock Ski Area, which
is a state-owned
ski area, and they had a campground there.
But is that bigger?
It's humongous. And what happened was, if you took the same amount of people and you put them in a space that was 10 or 20 times as big, which it was immense.
Right.
It
people had
like
to walk further.
It would look like there was nobody there.
Right.
And you had to walk like a mile from the camping area to go get a cup of coffee. So that's when Alt Expos opened up off-site or off out of the lodge, out of the main area, vending. So we actually had Alt Java. And so we sold our own coffee,
nice.
A buck a cup. But it wasn't actually a dollar. We started our own currency, too. So we started the...
Before Bitcoin, there was the Alt
Expo hours. So it was an hours-based currency. So for a tenth of an hour, you could get a cup of Alt Java.
So how did you earn those hours?
Well, we had there was a currency exchange.
Okay.
It was like... Okay, you don't have any hours? Oh, here, wait a minute. Let me go over to the currency exchange booth.
I'll sell you an hour for $10 or something, right?
And so the deal was you could redeem them on Sunday. We actually had a board of governors. Pat Kaz was on it. Let's see, I forget who else.
Most of our listeners don't know him, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, So we had a board of governors. We passed resolutions, and we agreed to release the currency into circulation. We recruited other vendors. I think we had 13 vendors that would accept expo hours, and then we agreed to redeem it on Sunday.
That's great.
But we only gave them 90 cents.
Alternative payments has always been a big thing within this community.
Yeah, it was gold and silver for a while, and of course now it's
Bitcoin or Dash or whatever. Yeah. Hey, we got more coming up here from the final day of Shirefest on the way on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. The jackhammering has stopped in the background, or whatever that constant
they were doing the
noise was. Yeah. There's the sunlight is out. The day is beautiful. We're at Rogers Campground. The view is incredible. Of course, we're in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. It's just absolutely splendid here. Ian Freeman here from Free Talk Live. Roger Paxton joining me for day number two of our shows together.
It's been a blast,
which has been fun. Have you recorded one of your shows here yet?
I have not.
Okay,
so you gotta do that. I do plan on doing that. Probably tomorrow.
Yeah. All right, cool. And check out Roger's show. It's The Lava Flow. You go to Lava Flow or thelavaflow.com, and you can download episodes there.
As a matter of fact, I'm having a couple of guys that do my NCAP Barbershop podcast.
They're coming
up from Alabama tomorrow.
All right,
and
good.
So the three of us and Brian McQuaid from Resist the Empire podcast, we're all four going to get together and do a mega podcast for the
cool.
Pax Libertas Productions.
Which is your production company.
Right.
We've got Jack Schimmick with us here, longtime guest here on Free Talk Live, one of the creators of the Alt Expo, which has been a mainstay for many years at these Free State Project events like the Porcupine Freedom Festival and the Liberty Forum. It originally started at the Liberty Forum, and that was the first Liberty Forum back in, I think, 2007.
Which, right.
We were there for that.
Yeah.
That was back when it was in the little Holiday Inn in Concord, New Hampshire. Same place we had the Libertarian Party Convention.
Oh, right, yeah.
That was a nice little hotel. Yeah, that was where the very first Liberty Forum was.
Well, it definitely outgrew that.
Yep, sure did. And you created Alt Expo, Jack, because you looked at the Liberty Forum schedule, and it just wasn't exactly what you'd hoped for, as I recall, and you wanted to have some alternative topics discussed that might not have been as welcome on the official schedule. So you just said, well, you know what? I'm going to create a competing friendly event in the very same hotel up in this here hotel room, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what happened was I was one of the first organizers of it because the Liberty Forum was like a new idea. We already had Porkfest as a summer event.
Right.
So everybody says, let's have a winter event too. So I volunteered. We went to the organizing meeting, and as they went around the table suggesting topics to have, they're all about politics, how to get elected, how to do this, how to do that, politics. And I said, well, what about the alternatives?
Yeah.
And Irina was the kind of the leader of it. She says, what, you mean alternative energy? And I said, no, alternatives to everything, you know? Mm. I says, what you guys are talking about is the existing system, and
right.
what we're for is freedom. We're
trying
for
to break
getting,
out of that system,
yeah.
sure.
And so they said, all right, we'll give you a one-hour segment. You can have a panel. You can have four different speakers. So we had a Liberty Dollar. We had, a Health Freedom guy. We had somebody from the Vermont secession movement, Second Vermont Republic.
Yep. Right.
And I forget what the fourth one was. And then they actually canceled that. I'm going like, what? And they told Irina told me that, John Stossel needs that space for his dressing room or something like that.
Wow.
And then what really killed me was the very next day we had an MVP meeting, which was then at a fish place in Merrimack. And she said that, actually, I just didn't think your speakers were up to snuff or
ooh,
whatever. And I was going like,
wow.
Oh, that was a real gut punch.
No kidding.
So there was a couple of people there that overheard that, too, and they were really pissed off, too.
Sure.
So we all went straight up to the hotel to see if we could get a room down on the first floor, too, just rent our own conference room, mm-hmm. meeting room. But they were all taken. So we got two rooms upstairs. And
just open the door between them, right? It was one of those connected.
That
rooms.
One, I don't think they were connected.
Okay.
But later on,
I know one year you had that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. We had three interconnecting rooms. So we made one room the hospitality room, and we made the other room the speaking room.
Right.
And our whole goal is to, like, keep people from bailing on the Free State Project, because a lot of people were saying, well, I'm not going to go. And I had to, like, spend a lot of time and energy saying, oh, no, come on, we'll do our own thing. We'll talk about the things you want to talk about. So we had talks about we had Linux, the alt operating system.
Right.
We had Catherine Albrecht talk about the RFID. We had Russell Canning talked about – at that time he had a newspaper called – it was either called the New Hampshire Free Press. Free Press, right. And,
which became the Keene Free Press, or the other way around. I think it might have been Keene Free Press that became New Hampshire Free Press. Because I think it was Keene Free Press, and then they went with a wider coverage area, so then they rebranded.
And back then, Second Life was a really big thing.
Yeah,
I don't know if you
even remember that. Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
That's right.
So there was a guy who had created a bar on Second Life called the Gimme Liberty Bar.
Yep, I remember
and so we
that.
Were all,
great.
We were all participating in Second Life. And
didn't they
all
play
that
Free Talk Live in that bar? As I recall,
they may have.
Somebody set it up where the stream was somehow now brought into Second Life.
That's fantastic.
You could hang out with other libertarians in this digital realm thing. It's like where you have this avatar that you create for yourself and you chat. Basically, it's a glorified chat room.
Essentially.
With 3D graphics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. That was, and at that time, we actually printed T-shirts, and I've got like 3 or 4 souvenir T-shirts from Alt Expo number 0. So our participation at Somalia Fest is Alt Expo 24, which means it's our 25th one because we started with 0.
Right.
So tomorrow at when Pork Fest starts, that's Alt Expo number 25.
Nice.
So awesome.
That's great. Well, I hope to see it expand next year. I think that would be fantastic because I think there's definitely a need for that may not be a good fit for that main stage. But there's still a lot of libertarians, a lot of people in New Hampshire, outside of New Hampshire, that want to hear those sort of topics.
Yeah.
And I think that expanding that would be absolutely great to see next year.
Yeah, and so we're always looking for volunteers. We're taking a little bit of a chill this year. My daughter got married, and I've been working out of state and everything. So we're having a lower profile Alt Expo this year. But we're going to have a speaker every day at noon down in the field, so we have one time slot in the field.
Well, it was nice to see after so many years of Alt Expo being there consistently at these events, doing their own thing, because you never asked permission, right? You just did your thing. You said, we're setting this up. You flyered the events.
Yeah.
You want to hear about these other topics? Come on up to room X, fourth floor or whatever. And then, after a number of years, they finally said, Jack, how about we put you down in your own tent on the ground at Pork Fest? And you still got to set the schedule. It was still kind of your thing, but
they realized
you in the fold.
We had actually essentially at our own expense, not at FSP expense.
Right.
The people that participated donated to help pay for the big tent we rented. We'd rent like $700 worth of rental tent and chairs and tables and stuff. They realized that we did have a big constituency, a lot of people, a lot of followers. We brought good topics, and for an organizer, as you know, Roger, anybody who's willing to do work to bring stuff here to
absolutely
make it happen,
let them do it.
So yeah, we came into the fold halfway,
know.
But you're right. No, in the past we didn't ask for permission. We didn't want to be told you can't do that.
Right.
We said no. This is what libertarians need to hear. These are important topics, so we're going to bring speakers on them.
Yep. I can't disagree with that at all. I think that's a very valuable service for sure.
Once again, another healthy schism that was good for the movement.
Yep.
Now off the air, you were mentioning that there are the two pronunciations of agorism or agorism. Now, first of all, what is agorism or agorism, and what's the difference between them?
Well, here's where it came from. Sam Konkin, whom I met in New York City at the Laissez-Faire bookstore back in 1974. Mm. I just happened to walk in one day. There was a debate in the back room, so it was against – back then they called them the radical libertarians and the minarchists. Well, actually, Konkin coined the term minarchists, but the ones that believed in working through party politics.
A minarchist is a small government support.
Minimum government,
right.
Yeah, because they were calling them limited government libertarians. So anyway, I met him in he was worried that the fact that the Libertarian Party had become so big and prevalent in the libertarian movement, and I was trying to give a little of this history earlier, for a while in the libertarian movement, which was essentially something that Carl Hess and Murray Rothbard cooked up. They wanted to say, how can we take all these different people that believe in freedom and they're from the left and the right? They actually had a newsletter for a couple of years called Left and Right. They decided they'd use this word libertarian, and when so there was a big kind of a coalescing in 1969. Well, in 1970, a couple of Californians started a Libertarian Party as a joke. And in 71, late 71, David Nolan and Susan Nolan cooked up the Libertarian Party that exists now. And so Konkin and a bunch of other libertarians says, wait, no, you can't be serious. Libertarianism is against political activism. It's against being elected. It's against, having a majority decide what happens
what's
in people's lives.
What's good for everybody
else,
right?
Yeah, yeah. So he says they're going to destroy the very meaning of the word libertarian because they're going to call a political party libertarian.
Mm. Right.
So he says we got to come up with some other word that kind of gets the meaning of what we believe in. So agora was the Greek word for marketplace and all that. So what agorism is then is advocating getting to a freedom society through only free market means.
Counter-economic means.
Yeah.
Which is a term that
creating alternative structures to compete with the state, right?
Right.
To compete it out of business.
Not so much to compete with the state, but to provide services for people. So the state
but
claims,
with the ultimate idea of supplanting the state's state services.
We just sort of don't care about whatever services they want because they don't base their services on the need of the people. They based it on legislation.
Right, right.
So it's like, it's not like you're trying to overthrow the government. You're trying to offer people what they need. The government, as it exists, is essentially run by a ruling class for their benefit, and they use propaganda and media and everything to convince people it's in their best interest.
Well, based on the readings that I've read, Konkin wanted to make the government irrelevant through mm-hmm. agorism.
Right.
And I think that it could happen when people see that there are competing economies out there that can give you the services you need without force. I think that people will jump into that.
Yeah, and I think that we need to have all different approaches. I think we need to have the agorist approaches, the people working outside the system, the people working inside the system, because unfortunately those cops, they're not going to stop enforcing those laws.
No.
And you want to create a competing protection agency, they're going to consider that a gang, and they're going to come in and target it.
Of course.
We're out of time from Shirefest. Jack Schimmick, thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Check out altexpo.org for more of him. We'll see you tomorrow.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in Liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.